Good afternoon. My name is John Weingart. I'm the chairman of the New Jersey Highlands Water Protectionist Planning Council. We don't do everything exactly on time, but I thought we'd start this hearing on time. Thank you all for coming. Ask the people, please sit down. This is the first of a series of three public hearings the Highlands Council is holding on the final draft of the regional master plan. The process that led us to this was that we proposed a draft of a master plan for public comment a little over a year ago. We held a series of seven public hearings around the Highlands region and in Trenton on that draft plan. We received a huge volume of comments, both at the public hearings and in writing, and then endeavored over the last year to revise the plan to both reflect new information we've been able to collect and to reflect the suggestions and comments that we received from the public. And we decided not to move ahead and just adopt the plan at that time, even though we had already sent out the public comment, but rather felt that we had made enough changes that we wanted to have another round of public input before putting it into a final form. So the plan is out for public comment, and we encourage your comments both at this hearing and the other two hearings to follow, and in writing. Let me ask the other members of the council who are here to introduce themselves.
Jack Schreier, Morris County Councilor.
Scott Wynette from Morris County.
Mimi Les from Persephone.
Kurt Olson, Chester County Public Member.
The Highlands Council of Tomato is a statutory body of 15 members. We all serve as volunteers. We were nominated by the governor and confirmed by the state senate. There's one vacancy at the moment. There are 14 members. There may be other members joining us or some members who have to leave during the course of this hearing. We're recording the hearing, on tape recording the hearing, all the hearings, and also staff from the council is taking detailed notes of what is said here so that we will be sure that all members of the council learn of the comments, all the comments that are made throughout these hearings, as well as, of course, getting to see the written comments that are submitted. There are a number of people who would like to speak here today. I hope you all, as you came in, filled out one of these, whatever this color is, red, purple, green, pink forms, and indicate if you want to speak. I will call on people to speak in the order in which you arrived and signed in. I ask that you try to keep your comments as close to 3 minutes as you can, because there are a lot of people who want to speak. We will stay as long as necessary to hear everybody who has something to say. You may well have comments that don't fit within that time frame, we'd ask that you submit them in writing if you can and summarize them when you speak here. I'll call a couple of people at a time so that you know you're next in line, and ask that when you come up, you come to the microphone at this podium up here and say who you are and where you're from, and then we'll be interested in hearing your comments. The other two public hearings, will be next week, next Monday and Wednesday. Hearing next Monday will start at 6 p.m. at Passaic County Community College, and the hearing next Wednesday, the 13th of February, will start at 6:30 at Voorhees High School in Glen Gardner. There's information at the back table with those dates and also the council's website. Submit comments. You can either send them by mail to the council at our mailing address, 100 North Road, Route 513, Chester, New Jersey, 07930. You can also send them by email to RMP for Regional Management Plan, rmpcomments@highlands.state.nj.us. The function of this hearing is for us, members of the council, to hear from you. We're not going to be able, in the interest of time, to engage in a dialogue. We're not going to be able to answer questions or to really respond in any way to the comments you make here today. There may be people here who have specific questions, and that's your reason to be here more than or in addition to delivering comments. And if you do have questions, I encourage you to talk to the staff who are at the table in the back I think a little later we're going to be able to move the table out into the hall. There'll be staff members there who will be able to talk to you about the question you have and either perhaps provide an answer right away or certainly get your information and get back to you subsequently as soon as possible afterwards. So if you're here with a question, you're welcome to stay, but you don't have to stay for the whole hearing to get to ask that question. So that's the process I follow. Thank you again for being here. I'll hear your time to talk to us. The first three people first four people in order are Darrell Goodrich, Jeff Tittle, and Donald Prude. So is Darrell Goodrich here?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, council members, thank you for this opportunity to share some comments on the regional master plan. I'm Darrell Goodrich. I'm a resident of Washington Township, Morris County. We have a 30 1/4 acre parcel that comprises woodlands, wetlands, potential vernal pool, farmland, stream, and residence. We breed alpacas, sell alpaca apparel and homewares, produce alpaca fleece. This fleece is pooled with fleece from other New Jersey and U.S. alpaca farms. And the U.S. textile industry makes consumer products from this fleece. An example is this 100% alpaca throw that was made in Paterson, New Jersey. We're in the protection zone of the preservation area. I believe in preserving nature, open land, and woodlands. That's one of the reasons I chose to live in the Highlands. We have lived here for about 27 years. I also believe in the preservation of private property rights and value and the right to farm. I complement the regional master plan's apparent goal of a harmonious public-private partnership. I have some real concerns, however, with some of the details. Chapter 4, Part 1, Subpart B, Highlands Open Waters, provides for a 300-foot buffer around streams and wetlands. This takes too much farmland out of service. My farm pickup truck carries a license plate that says New Jersey Garden State. We can't have a garden state without farms. A good example is my 30 1/4 acre property. If you add the total of stream buffers, wetland buffers, and wetlands, that equals 30 acres. How do I raise 35 alpacas on 1/4 acre? I would be out of business. I respectfully ask that you reduce the 300-foot buffer back to the non-Highlands 0 to 100 feet buffer. Chapter 4, Part 1, Subpart D, Critical Habitat, sets a 1,000 feet buffer around vernal pools. I suggest this is arbitrary and capricious. The DEP does not provide for this, and I don't believe there are any detailed studies that support that. The Highlands Council merely determined it appropriate. The area of a 1,000 foot radius circle is about 78 acres. That's almost three times the size of my property. I'm out of business. This consumes my entire farm and farms of my neighbors. Yes, the regional master plan does offer a right to petition for reduction of that 1,000-foot buffer, But that doesn't save the buffer from being arbitrary and capricious. What do I do with 40 alpacas while I petition for relief? Do they become homeless on the streets in Trenton? How do I get approximately $15,000 to fund environmental studies necessary for my petition for relief? Buffer modification is not a realistic remedy for me. I'm out of business. I ask respectfully that you replace the 1,000 feet buffer with the lower wetlands buffer. Thank you.
We introduce two other members of the council, Dennis Kovach and Tracy Carluccio. I also want to acknowledge Assemblywoman Marsha Caro was here in the morning.
Thank you. And I could just thank everybody for all their work and perseverance on the Highlands. It seems like getting this plan done has taken almost as much time as how nature created the mountains up here. So it seems like eons. I just wanted to start off and say that the Sierra Club, which I'm director of, is deeply concerned about certain parts of this plan and have real concerns as well as troubled by parts of it. And I guess part of it I'd want to just start off in saying is that we would, had hoped that this plan would be a lot clearer and have a lot more standards to it that were much more transparent. And it seems to me more like the state plan and less like the Pinelands Comprehensive Management Plan. We are deeply troubled by certain factors and certain areas where we think are in conflict with both the DEP rules and the law itself. One of the bigger areas is the community development zone and how in the preservation area it's going to be addressed, since most of those areas are forested and yet the DEP rules have one set of nitrate standards and you have one that's basically five times less restrictive. We're concerned with some of the mapping changes adding more areas, and I'll just give one example. The Pondview site, which is still mostly wooded in Rockaway, was one of the places changed. That was one of the places that had been kind of gerrymandered out of the original preservation area, but then was put into protection area, and now is in the community development area. And again, going back to the community development zone, these are the areas that are already showing the most depletion of water. These are the areas that are showing the most impacts from development, and yet these are the areas that are supposed to grow. And yet the act itself says that you have to look at secondary and cumulative impacts. So I don't know how you do that. Another concern, which is based on the exemptions from the act and how it's going to impact the new COA rules that are out, where towns are going to be building houses based on the exemptions and then being allocated one per five units affordable housing, which I think could set up a constitutional crisis in certain areas, especially a town like Ringwood where I'm from. Because the whole town is in the preservation area, there may be some areas for redevelopment, but you're going to have a number assessed to the town, and how are they going to meet that number based on these exemptions? And I think it's a real problem that has to be addressed in the plan, because the more exemptions are granted, the less housing should be allowed in the plan. And when I read the plan, I'm still not sure how much is allowed for the entire plan, where, except for the community development zones, but more importantly, it's supposed to be about water. And that's my real concern, that I don't see the kind of analysis that I wanted to see on how much water is actually available for development in the Highlands and outside the Highlands. I'm also concerned that areas that are showing depletion of water can continue to develop and continue to deplete the groundwater even though they're already in deficit. And that's 60% of the Highlands Huck 14s. Another area that's troubling, and again, the law is very specific, that sewers cannot go into the preservation area except for public health and safety and a couple of redevelopment. And yet, the concept of clustering could allow both package plants and sewer lines, as the plan is currently read, going into the preservation area. So those are real troubling concerns. And again, the DEP rules are supposed to be the floor, not the ceiling, and yet I see this conflict, and I'm concerned about this concept of harmonization where the DEP rules might get weaker to support the plan. And when I look at the nitrate model that you use and the amount of densities, that inside a cluster with a 10 milligram standard, which is going to be picking up nitrates from farming and from non-point and even from rainwater, that standard is just too lax. That the groundwater standard the DEP strives for is 5.5 milligrams per liter, not 10. And I think that there will be people drinking their septage if we develop in that pattern. Again, I really think that this is supposed to be about protecting water, and I really don't see it there. And parts of the Highlands are in a deficit, and it takes 50 years time of travel for water to recharge into groundwater, and yet the wellhead areas are only 12. Even on transfer development rights, one of the things that bothers me is that you can transfer out your development but still be able to keep an exemption and build one house. And I'm concerned that we're going to be creating, instead of having no build areas and preservation areas, we're going to be creating extremely large lot of state zoning in parts of the Highlands through this. And so these are really the concerns that I bring forward. There's many more, and they'll be in my written comments, and a lot of them are very technical. But, you know, I just want to leave with saying that instead of arguing about whether the glass is half empty or half full, the glass should be completely full to the brim with clean, pure Highlands water. And please, and I say this to the governor who's not here, don't monetize the Highlands. Don't sell out our water supply. Work to protect our water. Make sure that this Highland plan goes forward and not only protects the water in the Highlands, but make sure we have it for future generations. Thank you.
Donald Pruden.
Somehow I get the feeling that this and subsequent hearings are going to be an exercise in futility.
Can you talk a little closer to the microphone?
Somehow I get the feeling that this and subsequent hearings will be another exercise in futility. Last year you had 7 hearings with scientifically competent people, and you now have what you call the final draft. And it says the same thing as the original draft. The same errors are there. Not one map has a coordinate system. You cannot find point A on map A and that same point A on map B without a coordinate system. You do have a set of a scale that helps. I would suggest you use a universal transverse Mercator coordinate system. It's very easy to use and allows you to calculate the distance from point to point on a map easily. Avoid the use of degrees, minutes, and seconds. That really complicates your mathematics and it gets very cumbersome. If you had wished to hide map information, your council has done an excellent job. However, I don't believe this was an intentional act on your part. I believe the majority of these members don't have that much talent. Most of the maps, the digital resolution from a CD is so poor that if you enlarge it to see detail by 4 times, the maps just get fuzzier. If you enlarge it 16 times, everything's lost in a pixelated jumble of rectangles of various colors. I don't understand how these people that I know have the same issues and errors in the original draft and in the final draft. They still exist, and yet you've increased the final draft from 260 to 400 pages. What's in the extra 150 pages? Probably if you just took and went from a font point of 8 to font point of 10, you could probably achieve that, and you would have not added anything new to it. But I'm going to not waste anybody else's time. I'm going to let the scientifically competent people take over. Thank you.
Thank you. Can I ask the people in the room, we've been asked by the fire marshal to ask people to sit down. So people in the back can have a seat. And if you need to step outside or have a conversation, you can step out into the hall. The next people to speak in order, Amy Hansen, Ed Wengren, Joan Lisi, and Richard Longo. Amy Hansen.
Hi, thank you so much for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Amy Hansen, and my husband and I farm 38 acres in the Highlands region in the scenic Musconetcong River Valley. We preserved our farm several years ago, and we grow organic fruits and vegetables. We support the Highlands Act and want to see a final regional master plan that upholds the protection of water and nature mandated by the Act. I recognize the time and great effort put into the RMP by the New Jersey Council and staff, and I thank you for that. I am concerned, however, that farmland is not sufficiently protected by the regional master plan. The Highlands Water Protection and Planning Act emphasizes the economic benefits that agriculture provides the region and includes a concern regarding the loss of farmland over recent decades, the irreplaceable loss of important farmland soils, and the need to maintain the essential character of the Highlands environment, including rural landscapes. According to the RMP, the Highlands region has experienced a steady loss of agricultural lands, representing an average rate of loss of 1,700 acres per year, a 19% decline between 1986 and 2002, representing over 27,500 acres. Because of these serious and continuing losses of farmland, we cannot support the policies in the RMP that encourage more development of agricultural lands, even through cluster development. Development on agricultural lands reduces the amount of land available for agriculture, doesn't protect farmland soils, which is stated as an RMP objective. I will submit formal comments that further detail my recommendations. I urge the Council to allow only a limited amount of agriculturally related development on farmland in the Highlands. One way to help farmers in the Highlands continue to farm will be to aggressively pursue farmland preservation as supported in the RMP. Another way to help landowners is to allow the addition of farmland in the conservation area and elsewhere in the Highlands to be designated as sending areas within the Transfer of Development Rights Program. I would hope that the TDR program would be expanded so that receiving areas will be made available throughout the entire state of New Jersey, where development infrastructure already exists. We need to support a strong agricultural economy in New Jersey, and the Regional Master Plan can assist this effort by strictly limiting all development on farmland and taking care of New Jersey's precious soils. I recently learned that one inch of topsoil is made by nature every 500 years. That's one inch of topsoil every 500 years. That's not easily replaced. We must take care of our garden state and remember that to farm, we depend on our soil and our water. One more avenue of assistance that can help landowners protect their wetlands and stream buffers and get paid to do so is through the Natural Resources Conservation Service, and I imagine that the Highlands Council staff can give landowners their contact information. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Ed Wengren. I am an employee of the New Jersey Farm Bureau, but I'm here speaking sort of my experience through this whole Highlands process. I live in West Trenton and get my water from the Highlands through the DNR canal system. I came on board at Farm Bureau after leaving the Department of Agriculture as the Highlands legislative process began. My job was to represent agriculture through that process and address the needs of the agricultural community in the development of the legislation and then following it in the work of the council afterwards. Again, it's been a long process for all of us. We wish it could have been faster, but from the draft plan that was released to this second iteration, I think a lot of progress has been made about addressing the concerns that we've had in agriculture. The equity issue and finding the funding source for preservation is still out there. It still needs to be done, and we know that can happen. But an important part of what we sought in the legislation was to do real regional planning in the Highlands, to actually look at the crossroads of the residential the business economy, the transportation corridors that run through this region, and how do they all link and fit together. And on some of those components, we don't think you guys have gotten there yet. The transportation corridor, the transportation infrastructure study, I don't think covers the complexities of commuters and goods in and out of the region. A good thing is the recognition of existing development, but you guys have looked and developing like the lake communities and things, where existing development is and where that development could be creating environmental problems like failing septics, like lack of water. You've recognized those areas as places for future infrastructure investment. That's getting down the smart growth path that I think everybody envisions. If this is the place where problems are and this is the place where growth is, maybe we need to invest in fixing those problems with infrastructure and doing those tools. Preventing the sprawl patterns that we have now, large lot zoning, building on 15-acre lots, 20-acre lots, and clustering that development on smaller parcels is a smart thing to do. That way you don't divide up large tracts of agriculture land, but you reduce those parcels and the impacts of development to a smaller portion of those agricultural lands. Agricultural lands are built upon because they're the easy way out. It's easy to do your septic density models. It's easy to do your infrastructure. You build from the ground up. It's a lot harder to do redevelopment. And your plan needs to address how to redevelop efficiently and effectively in those areas where the environmental impacts have already happened. I think you have a long way to go on making that a part of your plan. The good things are there. The tools are starting to come together, but I don't think you've gotten that vision of what you want to do in the Highlands region explained to us and the public and those of us who've invested over 3.5 years, 4 years, 5 years into this process. And take the time to do it right, finish it off, and good luck. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm Joan Lisi, and here representing Protect Our Wetlands, Water and Woods, otherwise known as POW. We are a non-profit conservation organization and a land trust whose interest is the Beaverbrook watershed within the Farney Highlands. We have been supporting the concept and the reality of Highlands protection for decades and are pleased that the hard work of all parties has brought us to these final hearings. While we would rather have the Highlands Regional Master Plan than not, there are some serious flaws that must be corrected if the RMP is to have any actual impact on water protection. We have picked out only three issues to comment on and have relied on the numerous discussions within the Highlands Coalition with whom we are long-term members to help us understand this ponderous and lengthy document. Transfer of development rights is the key to the success of the RMP. Standards need to be clarified and organized. Viable receiving communities must be identified in areas with no water deficit and who have the infrastructure to welcome higher density. Sewers. Extension of sewers into the preservation area should be banned, as it encourages higher density in areas already identified as fragile. Higher density would result in even more water deficit and would likely occur in one of the 110 sub-watersheds already in deficit. Mapping. While I have not had the opportunity of checking all the maps in the RMP, I would like to bring to your attention the one included in the land preservation section, which deals in large part with forest preservation. The map does not appear to show any forest. Perhaps this is a technical difficulty during electronic publication, but one would hope this map does not stand as a legal document. Thank you for all the hard work of creating a document which we hope will protect the drinking water for half of the population of New Jersey.
Thank you. Richard Longo is following Mr. Longo, Doug Tavella, Stephen Shaw, and Russ Kirchner. Okay. And Doug Tavella. And then after that, Stephen Shaw and Russ Kirchner.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and Highlands Council members. My name is Doug Tavella. I'm a consulting forester approved for practice in New Jersey by the State Forest Service. I'm here representing the forest management community in New Jersey as chairman of the New Jersey Division, Society of American Foresters, member of the New Jersey Tree Farm Committee, and a member of the New Jersey Forestry Association. I've been involved with the natural resources aspect of the Highlands region since the formation of the New York New Jersey Highlands Forest Resources Working Group in 1999, and have helped to provide input from the forest management community from the release of the legislation in 2004 through the current comment period for the final draft of the RMP. Allow me to commend you on the important changes that were made to the RMP with respect to forestry. The forestry exemption was affirmed in many places in the current document, and many inaccurate and false statements regarding forest management were corrected or deleted. The current document recognizes the importance of forest management to the sustainability of the forest in the region. Your recognition of the value of the 100-year-old science of forestry is critical to the future health and productivity of the Highlands forests. There's still work to do. We have concerns about some lingering wording in the RMP that can have a profound effect on the ability of private landowners to steward their lands. I mention here a few of these concerns. First, forestry is a major land use within the Highlands region and should be addressed as such in the introductory sections of the RMP. Second, currently there are policies in place that would allow the Highlands Council to develop criteria and indicators for sustainable forestry. This should be put in the hands of trained professional foresters of the New Jersey Forest Service. High sustainability standards have been developed by the USDA Forest Service and by state forest services throughout the country. These standards have been established for over 60 years and are continually updated through ongoing research based on current forest conditions. Three, we continue to have grave concerns regarding policies and regulatory tools that discriminate against early successional habitat that is so critical to the life cycles of a large number of wildlife species. Specifically, the RMP relies on the DEP's landscape project to determine the presence of threatened and endangered animals and plants. Incredibly, the database is based upon computerized maps that contain flaws and biases. No one is permitted to see the information upon which these maps are based. And admittedly, the database is data poor on actual animal sightings. The landscape project encourages movement toward a climax forest that would lead eventually to the disappearance of the valuable oak-dominated forest that is critical to so many wildlife species. This is no way to make forest policy. A balanced approach that includes professionally planned and executed disturbance aimed at forest regeneration will lead to a mosaic of forest types and conditions on the landscape, and therefore habitat for the widest possible range of species. Lastly, the Highlands Council proposes changes to the Farmland Assessment Act. Credit for non-commodity uses and income averaging are the principal issues here. The forest management community has made suggestions along these lines to the Division of Taxation when the farmland assessment rules last sunsetted 5 years ago. There is a time and place for such work, and the work should be done by the Department of Agriculture and the Division of Taxation at the appropriate time. The Farmland Assessment Act has been a great success and is the reason why so much land has remained in open space over the last 20 years. In closing, I'd like to say that the forest management community greatly values its relationship with the Highlands science staff, specifically their professionalism and their willingness and interest to hear our input. We appreciate that the Highlands Council recognizes us as representatives of a 100-year-old science that's based upon research and the lessons of experience. We are stewards of the forest, and the job we do to maintain a healthy and sustainable forest defines our careers. The principal purpose of the Highlands Act is to deliver a sustainable supply of high-quality water to the citizens of Northern New Jersey. The forest is what enables that to be accomplished. To quote a colleague, it's about the forest. The health, structure, composition, and sustainability of the Highlands Forest today is in large part a result of the stewardship of landowners working with professional foresters for the past 25 years. In the coming weeks and months, we'll continue to deliver important annotated technical information to the science staff for their consideration so that the RMP can be further improved. This information can help to correct some of the flaws that still exist in the RMP. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Members of the Highlands Water Protection and Planning Council, my name is Stephen Shaw from Mountain Lakes. I'm a lifelong resident of New Jersey and consider myself fortunate to have had the opportunity to raise my family and operate a family business in New Jersey, and more specifically in Morris County. As a responsible citizen, a second-generation home builder, and a local elected official, I've been following the many studies, reports, and conservation efforts focused on the area I have called home for more than four decades. Today I'm addressing you as a private citizen who would like to have my children who are off at college be able to come back to the Highlands and make their home there as I did. I'm pleased to have the opportunity to appear before you today to share my views concerning the Highlands Regional Master Plan Final Draft, RMP for short. Obviously, since I live and work in the Highlands region, I appreciate the efforts of the Council to protect the region's water supply. However, the final draft regional master plan, as released, is seriously flawed, incomplete at best, and does not meet the statutory mandates of the Act and not ready for an honest public discourse and vetting process. In the limited time we have today, I'll focus on a few of the most glaring deficiencies. The final draft RMP still fails to address the economic impact of the implementation of its policies. The statute requires it to do so. The TDR program is not fully developed, let alone in operation. The statute requires it to do so. The Highlands Council has a constitutional obligation to create a realistic opportunity in the RMP for the provision of affordable housing in the Highlands region. The draft RMP does not do so. These lacking statutory criteria alone should have prevented the final RMP from ever being released. But just as troubling is the fact that the final draft RMP is no plan at all. Let me explain. When you actually take time and the resources to print out the plan and attempt to read it, you realize it's repetitive and extremely unreadable. The plan is 383 pages of goals, policies, and objectives repeated over and over again in each section, with references to thousands of pages of technical documents. Implementation of the goals, policy, and objectives is dependent on standards to be contained in reports yet to be prepared. Chapter 5, Programs, and Chapter 6, Programs, Chapter 6, Implementation, purport to be the meat of the plan. However, when one reads through those sections, terms such as develop a plan, implement standards, and adopt model ordinances is all one will find. Where's the beef? The draft RMP does not contain the standards and guidelines that are essential to understand the implement and the policies and objectives and their impact that they will have on the state and the region. It is impossible that anybody in the public, a municipal official, a landowner, can have a real understanding of the impact this plan will have on their community, and I think many other people agree with me on that on both sides. Additionally, the RMP purports to create a comprehensive scheme to protect and enhance the quality of, and quantity of the region's water. However, the RMP does nothing to address existing sources of pollution, reduce inefficient water consumption, especially non-essential uses such as golf courses, or address the increasing water needs of the state's population. The Act that created this plan has a preamble that recognizes that economic growth, development, and redevelopment in the Highlands is, and I quote, in the best interest of all citizens of the state, providing innumerable social, cultural, and economic benefits and opportunities. The RMP, however, fails to provide a balanced framework that will produce those benefits and opportunities. The Act will have an adverse effect on housing affordability and housing choice in the Highlands region, and prohibit people from living in a home of their choice, in a setting of their choice, and at a price they can afford. Finally, the Highlands Regional Study, the foundation for the task force and the Act, and this RMP asked the question, what do people who live in the live in and use the Highlands want it to look like for their children and grandchildren? Unless we balance the proposed Highlands Regional Master Plan with a plan for real that includes people, the question will be academic. My children, the one I spoke about at the beginning of the, my remarks, and my grandchildren will be forced to relocate to another area and look at the Highlands from afar. I'm afraid that the RMP spells RIP for the region's economy and working families who need a home. Thank you for this opportunity to share my views.
Russ Kushner, after Mr. Kushner, Dennis Galloway, Jay Grant, Robert Brackett, and Walter Critch.
Good evening. Ross Kushner, Pequannock River Coalition. I have to swallow my gum or I'm going to die. My group has been an outspoken critic of this master plan, and I believe for good reason. One problem facing the general public, as the gentleman pointed out before, is that the meat of the plan is contained in the maps, and when you look at the plan in its PDF format, you can't get the level of detail in the maps that you really need to say, what is this going to do in my own backyard? Your other option is to use the GIS mapping layers, but unless you have invested in thousands of dollars in software and have the necessary training, that's an impossibility for you. Fortunately, my group has the software and the training, and that's an ability that has allowed us to create maps like this one. And I wish I could show everyone the detail, but they can ask me about it later. This is a neighborhood in the Oak Ridge section of West Milford, surrounded by Newark's watershed property. It has been mapped by the council as an existing community zone because, according to the RMP, and I quote, it has limited environmental constraints. The council seems not to have noticed that this area sits on the banks of the Pequannock River, which is a Category 1 trout production waterway, and in this area carries water between two of Newark's reservoirs. It also is in a known water deficit area. In fact, the Pequannock River a few miles downstream goes completely bone dry every summer. I can't think of land that's more environmentally sensitive, yet the new version of the RMP simply doesn't recognize that. To make matters worse, the council has now mapped undeveloped parcels in this same area, including one right on the riverbank, as Tier 1 TDR receiving areas. That's the yellow on this map. Meaning that this is a suitable area to direct development from elsewhere in the Highlands. So you're going to take development from supposedly environmentally sensitive sites and direct it to the banks of the Pequannock River. How you arrived at this, I don't know. I know this area intimately. There is a beaver lodge immediately adjacent to this area. Maybe you mistook that for an existing high-density development. More subtle, but perhaps more troubling in this TDR, is a TDR receiving area that sits in the center of this neighborhood. It's a wooded area of about 2 acres. Now, you don't have to be a whiz kid or a hydrogeologist to recognize that this wooded area probably provides the groundwater recharge for the wells surrounding it. All these homes are on individual wells. What happens to these people and their wells when we slap more high-density housing right in the middle of their neighborhood? Don't you consider that? And that's just one example. There are literally scores of others in the Pequannock River watershed alone where high-density growth is being promoted over wetlands, river corridors, municipal well fields, and other features that are critical to water supply. And there are thousands more spread across the Highlands. I was just speaking with Ella Philippone about a property which she worked with Morris County to preserve last year. It's called the Terwinski Tract. Steeply sloped, a lot of wetlands, sits right on the banks of the Pequannock River. They paid $1.4 million for it with the help of Morris County. Applause for Jack Schreier. You folks made it a Tier 1 TDR receiving area. Is that a stroke of genius or what? The reason for this is obvious. Rather than a plan to protect water, this has become a blueprint for stuffing as much development as possible into the Highlands region. You have bent the Highlands Act to the limit in promoting growth, and where bending wasn't sufficient, you have simply broken the rules. Within the preservation area, and this site is within the preservation area, the Highlands, you're supposed to have 70% impervious, existing impervious cover before an area can be used for development or redevelopment. This area has 30% impervious cover. How is it that you mapped it as a Tier 1 receiving area. How is it that you're showing it as a good site for growth when it doesn't meet the requirements of the Highlands Act? You're just a slap in the face of the Highlands Act. I suggest that council stop worrying so much about the rights of real estate speculators and big developers and start worrying about the thousands of citizens like the ones in this neighborhood who are headed for a fall because the Highlands Council is giving their water away with both hands. What makes it so disturbing is that many council members are elected officials who are supposed to be representing their interests. It's high time they did. Tomorrow in West Milford, we're hosting a press conference at 11 a.m. Following that press conference will be a tour of sites like this one so that the press can get an actual idea of what this RMP means on the ground. We are inviting the full Highlands Council members to attend that. Come out and see what this RMP means on the ground, because I don't think most of you have a clue. Thank you.
My name is Dennis Galway. I'm a consultant forester in New Jersey, the co-chair of the New Jersey Tree Farm Program, past chair of the division of the Society of American Foresters, and a certified Society of American Foresters forester. I'd like to take a slightly different tack and comment on concerns I and other professional foresters and our clients, private landowners, have with the process of not only developing the regional master plan in the Highlands, but the preservation efforts in New Jersey in general. A little background information. Today's forests cover more than 45% of New Jersey. Over 62% is in private land and 38% in public land. These statistics are from 1999, and my experience working in the forest would lead me to say that there'll be an increase realized in the next inventory. New Jersey is a national leader in protecting land by regulatory legislation, albeit the benefit of some of this legislation is arguable. We all know that clean water is associated with a healthy forest. Generally, hardwood or deciduous trees, trees that lose their leaves, have greater nutrient demands than conifers and therefore are better suited to the job of filtering. In the highlands, hardwood forests are what we have. Overall, we may consider the forest health good. I don't know if that is good enough. We have realized an increased tree volume in the last 50 years. The concerns are many. As the state government, local government, and non-government organizations continue to buy large tracts of forest and farmland with the only goal, preservation, we lose sight of why we wanted to protect this land. To protect our water supply, to protect unique or rare habitats and threatened, endangered, or special concern plant and animal species, to provide areas to recreate and enjoy the aesthetics, and yes, to maintain areas to provide wood products, lest we forget that these are a renewable resource. With the problem of deer, invasive exotic plants, insects and disease, and overstocked forests, we have reached a critical point in New Jersey. Many of our forests are not regenerating themselves, and in many areas are unhealthy and not diverse in plant and animal species. On many of the preserved lands, the growth is stagnant and overrun with non-native species. The abandoned fields, a potential source of income, are growing invasive exotic species and will require much more work in the future to get them back to productive open space. They are not healthy or usable in their current state. Many people think we have a lack of mature forests, but the opposite is true. Mature forests have continued to increase over the last 50 years, contributing to increase in turkey, pileated woodpeckers, and black bear. However, the sapling seedling class has decreased significantly since 1972, 54% to about 13% in 1999. The decline of this early successional stage has seen a corresponding decline in wildlife species such as grouse, woodcock, quail, and songbirds such as warblers and sparrows that depend on this habitat. The burden, a healthy forest has all stand classes and is resistant to outbreaks of insect and disease. The burden of sustaining the natural resources of a forest has been put on the private landowner, yet every day regulations and ordinances are established to prevent these woodland owners from conserving these resources and sustaining the health and forest and biodiversity for the future. Groups such as the Garden State Preservation Trust, Keep It Green, New Jersey Conservancy, New Jersey Audubon have been lobbying for public funds and purchasing or helping to purchase lands for years with the objectives of protecting wildlife habitat, but with little thought to active management occurring to provide for the threatened and endangered species utilizing this habitat, to reduce the deer herd, to reduce the exotic invasive species, or to address regeneration. The state is equally culpable with a lack of forest management occurring on state land and with a lack of cooperation between agencies within a DEP or partnership with the professional foresters trying to manage the private forests. The success stories and projects are way too few. New Jersey has some of the best timberland in the country, and most of it on public land is going to waste. Income to pay for management projects can be realized from harvesting of trees. It is done by every state forest service that surrounds New Jersey. Implementation of New Jersey Forest Service management plans that have been in existence for years need to be a priority. The DEP agencies have to work together in a timely manner to conserve our resources while ensuring the continued delivery of the many goods and services provided by state forest land. The state has to lead by example, has to be actively involved, and bear the burden of responsibility of conserving and protecting the natural resources of the public forest, and by doing so will ease the burden of the private landowner. Today, we cannot achieve our goals of natural resource management by doing nothing or very little. The action of purchasing land and setting aside does not achieve the goals of ensuring forest resources for the future. It will take active hands-on management. I've heard recently that the NGOs think that the more time and finances should be devoted to the implementation of managing these resources that have been purchased and set aside. It seems they realize that forests are dynamic and not static and change over time. It seems they realize the pressures of natural and artificial environmental factors dictate the urgency of managing these forest resources now. I hope what I heard is true. The focus has to start shifting from purchasing and setting aside to management and maintenance. We need to take care of these woods and the species of concerns now. Make no mistake about it. Man influenced the woods present today, and we need to continue our influence to conserve them for tomorrow. To maintain rare and unique habitats, protect threatened, endangered, and special concern plant and animal species, control deer populations, and thereby aid in the reduction of exotic invasive plant species, and to help establish natural regeneration, monitor and treat insect and disease attacks, create and provide recreational opportunities, sustain and ameliorate aesthetic attributes, are some of the natural resources that foresters can manipulate to achieve the desired result. The forestry profession is growing very concerned with the trend to purchase and preserve land with no thought to managing its resources in the near future. This policy of set-aside and non-management is not supported by the forestry profession. Lastly, I'd like to remind the Council that we have longtime leaders in the profession of forestry here in New Jersey. These include Chrissy Harrigan, Heather Gracie Petty, and the previous speaker, Doug Tavella, and they are members of your Forestry Technical Advisory Committee. The goal of the TAC was to assemble technical and industry experts to provide input and aid in the development of the RMP. You have achieved one goal. You have secured these experts, and now I honestly hope you achieve the most important goal, and that is to listen to these wonderful people with no political agenda who really care about the forests of New Jersey and use the scientific-based recommendations they provide. If you do, I can assure you the forest resources of New Jersey will be here for many future generations to enjoy. Thank you.
Thank you. Jay Graham.
Good afternoon, Council members, Chairman Weingart. My name is Jay Grant. I am a citizen of Mendham, New Jersey. I was born and raised in New Jersey. I'm a businessman. I used to call myself a developer. I don't think that's possible anymore. I'm still a builder, but not developing any new land because the rules are too tight to do so. Thanks for your support, too. The council has been given a monumental task to address the needs of a very vast region. The first dozen or so speakers who have addressed you today have, I believe, implored you not to act hastily in the effort to complete the plan and approve it and roll it out before it's done. You've heard from environmentalists, you've heard from builders, You've heard from others who represent the forestry and the farmers. I think there's a common theme that you're hearing today. I believe you'll hear it again and again in your public hearings. And I believe their message is what I would ask you to consider, and that is that the plan is not ready to be adopted. The plan is statutorily and constitutionally non-compliant. It needs to be improved. Last year, the NJBA, the New Jersey Builders Association, filed comments with you detailing deficiencies of the plan. Unfortunately, in our rereading of the 400-page document that's been released, those deficiencies remain. In fact, the readability of the plan has declined. It is both repetitive and crucial information is lacking. The draft RMP does not contain the standards and guidelines that are essential to understand and implement the policies and objectives that you are working to implement. The plan references a wide array of reports, and documents that the Highlands Council intends to prepare sometime in the future. Quoting from page 256, it states, "The Highlands Council will provide site development standards for all projects, including redevelopment." Where is it stated when those will be provided? And when can we expect them? This is a huge void in the plan that needs to be addressed. The plan states further that housing is a major component of land use patterns in the Highlands region. The goals and policies of the plan seek to address a full range of housing needs for the region. The draft plan is completely unsuccessful in determining how the full range of housing needs should be met. Suggested minimum densities of 3 dwelling units per acre in the existing community zones are much lower than the densities required to provide workforce housing, rental housing, and the smaller housing units needed by single people and small households. 5 dwelling units per acre in the TDR receiving zones, which would have a substantial added development right cost, are inadequate to meet the range of housing needs that is required. That is particularly important because the Highlands region does have, at this time, a deficiency of rental housing and small housing units at prices that are affordable to the general public. The draft RMP does not include the standards and guidelines necessary to correct these existing imbalances and meet the full housing needs of the Highlands region. These are some of the reasons that you should consider revisiting the plan before you adopt it. The plan does not address the need for affordable housing. The Highlands Water Planning Council is a state planning entity with a regional planning responsibility. As such, the council has a constitutional obligation in its RMP to create a realistic opportunity for the provision of affordable housing. This provision has not been met, and I implore you to revisit it. I appreciate your efforts. I understand, as effectively volunteers to do the right thing, your work is done in earnest to achieve a goal for your generation, for us, and for the generations that follow us. My father was a builder and developer. I have children who may someday follow me into my industry. Despite comments heard, I don't think that's a terrible thing. Everybody in this room lives in a home built by a builder. These are not bad things. Your goals, I understand, and I support balanced opportunity for both preservation and growth. But please, let's work together to make that happen. Good luck in your efforts. Thank you for your time.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, chairman and members. My name is Robert Bracken. I'm a resident of New Jersey all my life as well. I'm a former mayor of a town in Sussex County. And again, as my colleague before me, I think that we're moving a little fast, even though you're behind your statutory guidelines for the RMP. It needs some more review and information so that us, the general public, the taxpayers of the state of New Jersey, can understand what we're all buying into. There's a lot of concerns with the opt-in, opt-out program aspect of yours. 88 towns in the region, if they all opt in, where are the tax-based dollars going to come from? The state is in deplorable financial condition today. We're selling assets, we're going to lease assets. What are we going to do 5 years from now when 88 towns don't have new revenue coming in? As a former mayor trying to balance a budget, these are important concerns for the everyone sitting in this room, whether you're on that side of the aisle or on this side of the aisle. There's not a builder that I'm aware of that's against promoting proper development. But it has to be done. The plan as it's written today is not adequate, sufficient to tell us all what direction 5 and 10 years down the road we're going to be standing at. Are we going to have towns physically and literally going bankrupt because you've sealed off their flow of potentially new redevelopment income or anything else like this? The plan is really needs to be more fully laid out so that we all understand it, and maybe we can all get on it. I have children. I don't want to pollute the water for them. I don't think anyone in this room, builders or alike, developers, want to pollute or use up. But again, I sit there this past Sunday morning and read the Star Ledger, the New Jersey business section. Got a developer going to put up 14 glass towers with something like 9,000 or 14,000 units in them. Where's that water coming from? From the Highlands region. There is no thought about the using of water, only the conserving. And I'm not sure that the RMP really takes a lot of thought in conserving water use. There's been states that have done the same program, that have gone to the inner cities and supplied them free toilets, the gallon and a half flushes, to take out the old 3 to 5 gallon flush toilets. States literally supply them. State of New Jersey is just trying to make a land grab here, in my opinion, and not giving us all the proper information. So 5 or 10 years from now, we're not selling the state capitol house to pay for what we're doing here today. Think it through. Make it complete. Let us all know where we are going 5 and 10 years down the road. Again, not one of us wants to pollute water. Thank you.
Following Mr. Critch, Joe Adamante, Ella Philippone, Robert Matarazzo, and Julia Summers.
Thank you. My name is Walter Critch, Jr. I am Morris County's Director of Planning, Development, and Technology. First, I just want to spend 1 minute and thank the council members for the inordinate amount of time that you've spent on this issue, the time that you will spend on this issue. What you do today really does matter to not only the Highland area, but all the residents within the Highlands area. I know at times certain remarks tend to be a bit caustic. I can see you biting your lip. I only hope that those remarks don't become personal. They should not. It does not aid this process. Recognizing the importance of the quality of life to our residents and economy, Morris County has been a leader in preservation of 17,000 acres of farmland, open space, and watershed lands, and shares your goals of protecting these resources. We are concerned, though, with some of the methods that the council is using to pursue these goals, and hope that the council will work earnestly with the county, its municipalities, in a truly collaborative effort to advance these goals in a manner that respects public and private concerns and the rights of local citizens and governments. While Morris County will be submitting some detailed written comments on the Highlands Regional Master Plan, I'd like to just highlight some of our major concerns, and these are all very general in nature, but I hope you keep these in mind as you go through this process. The first is flexibility. The draft plan allows the consideration of locally initiated changes to the RMP, but only under the most restrictive conditions and with final authority, of course, retained by the council. We thank the council for acknowledging that we are allies in this process and that the RMP in its current form is not without error, nor can address every unique local planning situation. Despite this, many no-growth critics decry the smallest attempt of the council to provide balance in the RMP, consider impacts on private property rights, acknowledge corrected information or real-world conditions. Plan is supposed to be about protecting water resources and promoting smart growth, not stopping all development. More flexibility is needed, not less. Second point is plan conformance. The details of required conformance activities are presently not fully known. What will conformance mean? We hope that the council will allow some latitude in meeting common goals and work with local governments as partners. We expect the council to make this process clear, direct, and to avoid unnecessary and or redundant requirements for plan and development regulations amendments. The council must provide detailed direction. Local governments should not be required to guess at what will be found acceptable. Third, consistency. In the preservation area and in all conforming municipalities, the Highlands Council will be reviewing projects and wastewater management plans as to their consistency with the RMP. The term consistency has not been fully defined, but based upon Council's past discussions regarding wastewater plans, we know that some of the members feel that anything that does not comply 100% with the RMP is inconsistent. This approach is unrealistic and unnecessarily narrow. With 7 counties and 88 municipalities, we hope the council will recognize that cooperation is needed to address varying local conditions and concerns. There will be few, if any, projects or plans 100% consistent with the RMP. Fair consideration of individual situations will be needed, not rigid compliances to a set of one-size-fits-all requirements and checklists. Fourth, MOUs and primacy. While the Highlands Act requires coordination between the council and various state agencies, there is still some uncertainty on how these entities' plans and programs will interact. After more than 3 years, the council has recently approved a memorandum of understanding with the Office of Smart Growth, which addresses process but not primacy. What happens when there is a conflict between state agency programs and the Highlands plan? Who wins? There are already conflicts and duplicative processes that affect local governments. For example, there are differences in the standards for NJDEP wastewater management plan analysis and Highlands wastewater management plan analysis. We do not intend to develop two WIMPs or go through two reviews because the NJDEP and the Highlands Council have different requirements. County does not want to waste time, money, and other costly resources to conduct the same studies multiple times for multiple agencies. Detailed memorandums of understanding on programmatic policies with the NJDEP, the DOT, OSG, and COA are necessary to address potential conflicts and to understand the relationship between the agencies. The full implications of the RMP can't be known without these agreements, and these agreements should make it very clear as to primacy. Finally, voluntary opt-in. The Highland staff has been meeting with Highland area communities touting the benefits of opting into the plan, which is voluntary for the planning area communities. While staff speaks a great deal about potential benefits, we haven't really heard a frank discussion on the impacts to local control over master plan, regulatory, and approval decisions. Municipalities may not realize that the council will have the final say on development approvals through council call-up provisions if they decide to opt in. What happens if a municipality decides later to opt out? Will that even be allowed? Will the same exemptions exist in the planning area and in the preservation area? We ask that the staff offer both pros and cons when relating the issues of opting into the planning communities. After all, you need to know what the entire story is. Finally, there are many other issues that we'll be addressing in some formal comment document by the planning board. I end this observation with your words of your own planning consultant, Charlie Simon, recently stated at a conference in New Brunswick that the long-term success of a regional master plan cannot be accomplished from the top down. Success of a regional plan hinges on collaboration, not imposition. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon. The fundamental goal of the Highlands Water Protection Act is to protect water, allowing growth consistent with that goal for, quote, public interest of all New Jersey citizens. The goal is good and correct, the need compelling. The legislature said that they had to stop, quote, imminent peril of losing thousands of acres of watershed land a year, and that the existing land use system, the untouchable god of home rule, my words, could not protect water and natural resources. A regional approach was needed. But details of how to implement that plan fall short of the goal. In our area, in my township, one-third of Washington Valley, which is on the National Historic Register, with Category 1 trout streams, endangered species, was reclassified from protected to existing community, constrained. This downgrade will bring potential development, lowering water quality. Why and how does this preserve? Why does the plan not explicitly prevent extension of sewers and infrastructure into preservation areas when sprawl and degradation of resources will inevitably follow? Why also does the plan allow development in areas with identified water deficits? We need clear, developed water protection standards and programs that preserve water quality and prevent water pollution rather than, after the fact, band-aid of mitigation. The plan must emphasize enforceable standards. And to those who oppose limits on their land use, I should remind them that none of us want the government telling us what to do, but we accept limits simply by living in a society. We know none of us can do exactly what we want on our property. Zoning says, for example, I can't build condos on mine, as much as I might like to. We give local and state governments power to say and limit what can be built or how property can be used. With strict enforceable standards and limits in preservation areas, we will have plentiful pure water. Without them, we and our children will pay huge costs in taxes to treat water or import it. But from where? If we go along as we always have, some speculators and developers will get rich and move on, while our taxes increase for the rest of us because of the added cost of infrastructure, services, and oh yes, there will be more jobs for a while. Some will say or act as they always have and say, I've got or I'm getting mine and the hell with everyone else. Or we could act in this manner. As the preamble to our Constitution says, we can promote the general welfare. Let's think long term for a change and for all of our children, and let's get this right. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Ella Philippone. Tonight I'm speaking to you as the New Jersey Chair of the Greenwood Lake Commission. The Greenwood Lake Commission was forgotten by the Highlands Council. This commission was established by the New York and New Jersey legislatures after a great deal of effort by the two states and by the two legislators, the governors of both states. As such, we have gotten substantial support from the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection, even though when the legislature established us, they gave us no resources. We had no money. We still have no money. We received grants from the DEP and from the Congress of the United States to do the work that we have done. We are currently developing a master plan that should serve as the template for this effort in the Highlands. It is very important, in my opinion, that you know your turf, that you know what's going on in the local area. And when we began our effort at Greenwood Lake, the first thing we did was we looked at what kind of data collection systems are there for this lake. And there is only one gauge which measures flow at the dam that is really of service to North Jersey District Water Supply Commission and not to the lake. We investigated with the U.S. Geological Service how much it would cost to put in a water quality monitoring station. We found that that was somewhat prohibitive for this commission that has no money, and that we would eventually have to delay that decision for some future date. In our work with the Highlands, we know that you do not have a comprehensive data collection system. So it is one of our goals to have the kind of mechanical aids to tell us what's going on in the ecosystems of this little watershed that is called Greenwood Lake. In the winter of 2006-07, we had a drawdown. We had some problems with process. We bounced all over the place when our citizenry tried to get some kinds of waivers so that they could repair their docks and do some of the things that people do to maintain their properties. We were told that we couldn't go to DEP at this point. We had to get a waiver from the council. We never got a response, and I think that that is poor communication with an agency, the Greenwood Lake Commission, that is mandated in the legislation to cooperate on a two-way street with the Highlands Council. I think it's important that we begin to communicate a great deal more and understand what some of the problems are with lake management as it is laid out in the current plan. We haven't had any meetings with the council at all on the plan because we're busy working at the lake. We had $100,000 to pay for a stump removal project. The southern part of the lake is man-made. It was made 100 years ago by people in New Jersey who wanted a lake. The lake ended at the New York border. Those stumps have been a major safety hazard. And we finally were able to get them removed. And the change in water quality was unreal. I couldn't believe it. The turbidity was gone. Safety was better for the boaters. And we had our first sailing regatta in 12 years. So as we look at our goals at the commission and we look at yours, we have to see, is there compatibility? And the first thing that bothered me about, and bothers our commission, is the effort to put in additional housing at some of the worst places in our little watershed above the lake. We have problems at that lake because for 100 years, over 100 years, nothing has been done to manage it. In some places, it is so shallow that none of us would have difficulty walking because it's only a foot deep. We have to dredge. Please don't make it so difficult for us to maintain this lake and to bring it back to what it should be. We have the community developments of the existing community zones, the purple blobs, as we used to call them, that are right at the area where Belchers Creek comes into Greenwood Lake. That is a mistake of the past. You should identify those development communities in a watershed that were mistakes. And you should help us find ways in which to correct it. One of the first things Green Acres said to me when I got onto this commission was, find an access point for us. There is none. It is fully developed. There is no vacant land in the New Jersey section. There is some in New York, but that doesn't count. These existing community zones, which you have put into the hucks of the Greenwood Lake watershed, are in water deficit areas. In the last two major developments that were promulgated by development companies, the state has not provided a water allocation for either one of them. So we're saying that there's not enough water to go around for these increased development themes. So perhaps we should put a hold on some of that until we recover part of the deficit. And that might not be too hard to do if we get people involved with working with the commission and with the council. The lake management tiers that are part of the program for lakes have not been clearly defined. In looking at the technical agenda, the addenda, there is an attempt to clarify it, but the attempt points to things in Minnesota and Wisconsin which also are not as secure as you would like it to be. And even that document questions the validity of some of these tiers that you're talking about. In that document, in the technical document, there's also discussion of time of travel. Now, your scientist, my friend Dan, Dr. Dan, and I have worked together for many years on groundwater. And we understand the time of travel concept. and it is well explained in the technical document. But that explanation is not reflected in the plan. And so there has to be some kind of reference in the plan as to how you plan to do some of the things that you're talking about.
Can I ask that you wrap up your comments and submit
it? Okay. I'm gonna give you this.
Okay.
I'm trying to get to the highlights, John, because I think that it's
important. You haven't speak for 7 minutes.
Okay, I will submit this.
Okay.
But I hope that my final word is, there's a lot of things in here that I think can be improved. It's not a criticism, it's an improvement. But I think in summary, I think the time has come for us to sit down and talk about lake management. I think it's time that you recognize that in your legislation, you're supposed to do that. And we, and my commissioners and I, are all available, ready to meet with you and to duke it out.
Robert Matarazzo.
Good afternoon, Chairman, Highlands Council members. I'm here today representing the State Board of Agriculture. We just finished our 3-day convention, and I made it back here in time to testify. The State Board of Agriculture offers the following comments on the draft final regional master plan for the Highlands region. The board is an 8-member body which sets policies that direct the Secretary and the Department of Agriculture in carrying out its duties and responsibilities. We continue to strongly believe that the successful implementation of the final RMP requires a number of critical components. First, a sufficient, dedicated source of funding for land and easement acquisition in the Highlands region, separate and apart from whatever funding mechanism succeeds the Garden State Preservation Trust, but containing parallel equity protection components to permanently protect these lands while compensating property owners. Identifying a funding source prior to the plan's adoption would reassure affected landowners that the financial interests are being respected and make for a much more productive and collaborative process. We strongly urge the Council to petition the legislature to condition plan adoption on this fundamental issue being addressed. I'm a third-generation farmer. I can't say it strongly enough that if this plan goes through without funding, it's going to be like a stock market crash for the rest of the farmers in the state of New Jersey who are not either in the Pinelands or the Highlands. Because why should we stick our neck out if this is how we're eventually going to be treated? Okay, so I think it's a reasonable plan. Be sure you have your funding so that you can purchase the rights, keep the farmers going, but this is their equity. This is all that they have. We don't have 401ks. We don't have anything similar to that. This is what we have. Second, a viable private sector-driven TDR program that aids in preserving our important resources while promoting growth in appropriate areas, including the identification of receiving areas both within and outside the Highlands region, which we are encouraged to see some potential areas identified within the region in this draft of the plan. And before I go on, I just spent 25 years on a planning board in White Township. Half of our township is in the Highlands, half of it isn't. We've worked with TDR, we've worked with clustering. It's a challenge, there's no question. We tried to do this. We tried to take all of our farmland in White Township and either TDR or cluster it. We didn't get any buyers. So I just encourage you that whatever way you do that, that you do it strong and effective so that it forces people to act. Third, funding for conservation planning to assist with the implementation of soil, water, and natural resources conservation practices on our agricultural lands to ensure proper stewardship of these resources into the future. It's very discouraging to hear from the governor's office, all these cuts and everything that's going to happen, and it's going to affect soil conservation. This is the key element to what you're trying to do. I mean, so that funding has to be maintained, and everyone in this room needs to support that when it gets to the governor's desk. We believe it is extremely important to allow for a well-constructed cluster ordinance that protects landowner equity and results in the preservation of agricultural lands. Therefore, we fully support the policy that mandates clustering for residential development and agricultural resource areas with an 80% set aside of the project area for continued agriculture use. I can tell you that I would love to see, out of every 100 acres, 80 acres are farm and 20 acres are developed in the state of New Jersey. And if we had started that policy 20 years ago, we wouldn't be having this conversation. We also support the refinement of the agricultural preservation priorities mapping, which focuses on prime soils, farm size, and proximity to preserved lands, preserved farms. We believe that this draft of the plan is a step in the right direction, and I commend you on that, as it provides a more realistic picture of the current land uses in the Highlands region and begins to frame a direction for future land uses. However, much work remains, including the identification of the amount and type of development the region can sustain, a cost analysis that determines the cost of implementing the RMP, and a transportation strategy that identifies specific projects that link land use with transportation systems. We urge you to continue working with local farmers, with the Department of Agriculture, with the County Agricultural Development Boards, with the New Jersey Farm Bureau, and other agriculture representatives to develop programs that will support and enhance agriculture in this region and allow for the expansion of these operations as new agricultural techniques and technologies become available. We will be providing more detailed and specific comments to the Highlands Council before the close of the comment period. So you'll hear from somebody. Thank you very much.
Julia Summers, following Ms. Summers, Ted Magleen, Lois Drysdale, Andrew Drysdale, and Jean Rich.
I have been asked to ask you if there is an order, and if so, which number you have reached in your speakers.
We're doing it by birth signs, and we're excited. We're doing it on the order queries. That would have been better. We're doing the order in which people walked in and picked up a card, and we're up to number 21 out of 42.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for conducting this second round of public hearings. We know you are not mandated to do so, but appreciate your statements that public input will improve the regional master plan. I'm Julia Summers, Executive Director of the New Jersey Highlands Coalition, a diverse network of organizations, small and large, local, regional, statewide, and national, and individuals. Our mission is to represent their common goal to protect, enhance, and restore the New Jersey Highlands. The Coalition's review of the final draft Highlands Regional Master Plan has identified important and substantial changes that are necessary to ensure compliance, both with the Highlands Act and with the imperative to protect the Highlands' critical resources immediately and in the long term. We will be submitting extensive written comments on these issues, and far more than I will touch on today. However, chief among our greatest concerns are deficiencies in the area of water supply and quality, wastewater treatment and infrastructure, natural resources, and the relationship between the RMP's objectives and policies and their implementation. For water, we are extremely concerned that development and increased water use may continue to be permitted in designated water deficit areas, thereby exacerbating an existing critical problem. In our opinion, this problem today, now, has already risen to become a public health emergency. Of the 183 PUC-14s in the Highlands, by your own testimony, over 120 of them are already in deficit. Additional growth in the Highlands should not be promoted in existing areas of water deficit, as defined in the Regional Master Plan's net water availability by HUC-14, until after those deficits are remedied. Further, in general, the 300-foot Highlands open water buffer in the planning area is a welcome addition to existing water quality protections. Nevertheless, exemptions to the buffer requirements are overly broad and inconsistent in the various sections of the RMP and are weaker than the recently adopted stormwater management rules. At a minimum, the RMP should reflect that protection. For wastewater treatment and infrastructure, extensions of sewers into the preservation area or creation of community on-site treatment systems. I recognize that you have stated you are going to clarify this language, but we needed to say that we feel strongly it should be banned, except where otherwise explicitly mentioned in the Act for health and safety. We do not believe that that should include to serve new cluster development. For natural resources, the Regional Master Plan has extensive language concerning the protection of natural resources. But there are inconsistencies in the various discussions of obtaining exemptions from these rigorous protections. The RMP must state clearly and unequivocally the hierarchy of natural resource protection. Number one, avoidance. Number two, minimization. And number three, mitigation. Further, to protect forests' intrinsic and economic value, it is critical that a state-certified forester approve a forest stewardship or management plan prior to the purchasing of an easement. In addition, the latest release of the RMP allows municipalities and counties to request changes in the land use capability map, moving land from restrictive zones to pro-development zones without sufficient criteria to ensure that vital resources will not be degraded. It is important there be clear language of what no loss of resources means and that that be achieved in this program. In the relationship between policies and objectives and implementation, the policies and objectives listed are important statements for the future of the Highlands. Nevertheless, the plan does not yet clearly establish how these policies and objectives will be implemented. The project review and other implementation sections must identify clearly that the achievement of the objectives will be the bar that must be met. Without clear means and rigorous standards in the implementation sections, the policies and objectives are simply aspirational. Thank you for this opportunity to comment. We will be delivering our complete comments shortly.
Hello, I'm Ted Maglian. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. My first comment is with the Act itself. I've heard a lot of dialogue here this afternoon, and there seems to be somewhat of a common thread between some of those who are for the Act and some of those who are opposed to the Act, and that is its shortcoming because it's really not a comprehensive plan. As far as a planning tool, it falls short in that it doesn't cover the entire state. There's been some discussion about the failures of home rule, which I'm in full accord with. And this act is an improvement upon that, but it's not a resolution because many of the provisions or the expectations that are contained within the Act set certain expectations for entities that are outside of this Highlands region, if you will. And what happens if those entities don't follow through? I mean, what impact will that have? It's not just a smooth, comprehensive plan. And regardless, I believe, regardless on if you're for or against it, these shortcomings should be addressed. I know it's not your charge, but maybe you could bring this up to the powers that be that can truly make this into a progressive plan for the state of New Jersey, not just one portion of New Jersey, with expectations that the improvements within this region are going to transcend throughout. The second thing I want to address is some of the environmental standards that are contemplated within the Act. And again, it sort of ties into my first comment. Again, it's not comprehensive, and many people are stating that these proposed regulations are insufficient. They don't go far enough. And I would just ask those people to, if you could, just to look at where you live now. Impose those restrictions on your farm, your lot, whatever. And if you could not comply with those restrictions, are you willing to vacate, sell your plot of ground to the state? It seems disingenuous to set a higher bar for someone else than what you're willing to choose to do for yourself. Again, it's just a matter of equity. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Lois Chrysler.
Good afternoon. My name is Lois Drysdale. My husband Andy and I own 16 and a half acres in the preservation area of the Highlands. This farm property is all that remains of the 120-acre farm purchased in 1926 by my husband's grandfather. When the rest of the family chose to sell to a developer, we chose to keep our share and farm it because my husband liked to farm and had farmed the entire farm in the 1950s. We thought that eventually this would provide us the needed money for retirement. Had the state not interfered, we would now be comfortably retired. We are not speculating. The land and its value were already there. If the water and endangered species are so vital to our state, why are the landowners who have preserved our land not being fully compensated for the drastic loss of value caused by the Highlands Act? We are in our 70s and have worked so hard. For what? Aren't the landowners as important as the salamanders and the bog turtles? Does anyone care? Does anyone really care? Thank you.
Andrew Drysdale.
Good afternoon. My name is Andy Drysdale. My wife Lois and I own 16 and a half acres in the preservation area of Chester Township, Orange County, New Jersey. The land is the remainder of my grandfather's dairy farm that he purchased in 1926. I have been self-employed since 1969, and I am 72 years old, and my wife is 70. The land was a major part of our retirement fund. Our plan to subdivide the property was environmentally friendly and was stopped by the Highlands Act. Water that now runs off the tract and out to sea would have been put back into the ground. Many trees would have been planted where now none exist. A very dangerous drainage situation that exists in the public road would have been corrected by the offsite improvements. The Highlands Act is as nice as it is because it has been well taken care of by its people and their local governments. It would have been even better if the state had not intervened with such things as the Mount Laurel decision and forced high-density growth areas on municipalities. The majority of the Highlands Council and their staff have worked for nearly 4 years now in an attempt to make something good out of something bad, out of a bad and unnecessary law. You know what the story is. Please tell the governor and the legislature to abolish this law, as well as many others which are costing the taxpayers so much money. There are too many large government programs and huge retirement benefits like the six-figure pensions that state judges now receive. Finally, I was pleased to see much of the Declaration of Independence read prior to the Super Bowl, and would like to quote a few lines from it. Governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government, of the governed. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it. End quote. To put this statement into context, please read the entire document, paying particular attention to the ninth reason beginning with the word he, which referred to King George III. Thank you.
Dean Rich, followed by Elliot Ruga, Stephen Gruber, Thomas Coven, and Mervyn Haynes.
I'm Jean Rich. I'm here to speak for the Washington Valley Community Association of Morris Township. The Washington Valley Historic District is on both the state and national historic registers. We believe that all of it belongs in the preservation zone and that certainly should not be designated PA1. We have worked for years to protect the valley and have succeeded in fending off a highway, a jail, a reservoir, a huge CCRC, a psychiatric hospital, and many other inappropriate proposals. We have succeeded because much of the valley is part of the national and county park systems, and because Patriots Path traverses the valley, because of its rural character and the environmental sensitive areas within it. The valley is part of an uninterrupted green belt that stretches all the way to New Jersey Audubon's Sherman Hoffman Wildlife Sanctuary in Bernardsville. The green belt makes it possible to shelter threatened and endangered species, and the headwaters of the Whippany River is within the Washington Valley. The attempt by the township government to remove any protection from this area is unacceptable. The valley is too valuable to the people of Morris County and beyond, and all of it should be PA5. We also support the protection of Jones Woods. It has mature woods, a vernal pond, threatened and endangered species, and historic structures. It should also be no less than PA5. Please help us to protect these important and beautiful areas. All of our children and our grandchildren will be the beneficiaries. And thank you very much.
Elliot Ruga.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman and members of the council. My name is Elliot Ruga. I'm with the New Jersey Highlands Coalition. Thank you for the opportunity to give my comments on this one page. In June 2004, when the New Jersey legislature passed the Highlands Water Protection and Planning Act, they had found that, quote, the existing land use and environmental regulation system cannot protect the water and natural resources of the New Jersey Highlands against the environmental impacts of sprawl development, and that the protection of the New Jersey Highlands, because of its vital link to the future of the state's drinking water supplies and other key natural resources, is an issue of state-level importance that cannot be left to the uncoordinated land use decisions of 88 municipalities, 7 counties, and a myriad of private landowners, unquote. These findings are chilling, and they demand bold action to answer them. Will the Highlands Regional Master Plan fully address the concerns as stated in the Act? Only then will you have done your job. The mission to protect our water is critically important. It is not about what is mine or what is yours. It's about a vital resource that must be guarded for the benefit of all of us. It is difficult to remember the fear and uncertainty and the economic costs that accompany a prolonged and severe drought, especially when it's raining outside. In the early 1960s, we experienced a critical drought in northern New Jersey to the extent that businesses that relied on water were shut down. In the early 1980s, we were again faced with a critical drought. As a resident of Morris County at the time, I recall my community was 5 days away from our local fire department decreeing they would no longer put out house fires because they couldn't use the last of our precious water resource to extinguish the fires. Grasses were dried up, the land was sere and a tinderbox. In September, tree leaves just turned brown, shriveled, and fell. Then we got hit with a hurricane, which saved us. we are not always going to get the hurricane. Since that time, the population of northern New Jersey has almost doubled, water usage having risen accordingly, and the availability of water has diminished significantly due to continued piecemeal development and fragmentation of the Highlands. Indeed, it is by the Council's own findings that at least 110 of the 183 watersheds in the Highlands draw more water than can be replenished. How will the Highlands' water be protected if development can continue in deficit areas? When exceptions to the 300-foot open water buffer are weakly defined, when extensions of sewers are allowed in the preservation area, and a regional master plan that outlines some important policies, objectives, and programs, but lacks a clearly defined manner in which they will be implemented. When the day comes again that we find ourselves in the next prolonged critical drought, and the conditions are such that it will be a level of severity that we have not yet experienced in New Jersey, I will remember this day when the citizens of New Jersey asked the Highlands Council if they have done their jobs to the fullest extent as mandated by the Act. Thank you.
Stephen Gruber.
Hi, my name's Steve Gruber. I call myself a professional volunteer. I work for a lot of different environmental groups in New Jersey. But anyway, since the impetus for saving the Highlands was to protect the water supply of North Jersey, part of the plan should be to totally stop any building, because if you're pulling out more water than you're putting in, it's going to run out. So the only way you can prevent that is just stop water, stop a building. I've heard different numbers, but they said there are 183 watersheds in New Jersey and 110 of them are in deficit. And yet the regional master plan does not stop building in any of these deficit areas. And then the other number I've heard is that from the Passaic River Coalition is that there are 47 million gallon per day deficit in the Passaic River Basin. And, you know, the state's mandated to balance the budget every year, and the water should be treated the same way, that you should have to balance what you pull out with what goes back down into the ground or flows into the reservoir. The only way we can do this is to stop building. And the driving force for this problem, too, is also that we're overpopulated. New Jersey's the most densely populated state in the country, and that's nothing we should be proud about. This is responsible for the worn-out highways, the high taxes, and all of our other problems. And allowing development is just going to worsen that population problem and everything that goes wrong with it. So make conservation part of the plan. Make the conservation part of the plan stronger by not allowing development in areas where there's a water deficit. Thanks.
Thank you, Thomas Coleman.
Yeah, my name is Thomas Coven. I'm a longtime resident of Huntington County, 35 years, and I've been watching this board trying to put together a plan for a hell of a long time. Thank you very much for your diligent work. Well, Council's been charged with forming a regional plan to protect the water resources of the Highlands area for the state of New Jersey. The proposed plan uses novel metrics, low flow, and recently collected data to base its decisions on. These decisions should be predicated on the mandate to protect, enhance, and restore the resources of the Highlands. However, when we know an area is in water deficit, it defies all logic to allow development to proceed until the deficit has been alleviated. Permitting development in deficit areas is needlessly gambling with our lives and our water. The purpose of the council is to reduce the risk to the resources, not to gamble with them. Please make a clear and strong plan. Thank you.
Thank you. Mervyn Haynes, to be followed by Christine Hepburn, Dave Pringle, David Arthur, and Michael Zendali.
Merv Haynes, I'd like to start off with a positive section, I think. It's something that I couldn't find in the new RMP, so I had to go back to the old one. All right, it was under forestry, and it's the disturbance to the upland forested area is limited to, and under I, it's 20 feet directly next to a lawfully constructed structure or the perimeter of a septic disposal bay. However, maybe that has been changed, but if it hasn't, the New Jersey Forestry Fire Service says that the minimum in that area should be 30 feet. So I think that in the interest of safety, anyhow, that you should maybe extend that out to 30 feet. Now, for the other part, maybe not so positive. Okay, what I want to touch on is the potential of the restrictions for the amount of acres in the area. All right? I just want to throw out a few figures for you. All right? With a 600-foot buffer on the stream, 300 feet on the other side, okay, we got 600-foot buffer. All right? It takes 73 linear feet in order to restrict 1 acre of land. In 1 mile, you restrict 72 acres of land. In the new RMP, with their 3,605 miles of streams, we come up with 259,560 acres, which is 30% of that area. You come down to a forested area. In the RMP, it says you have 54%. So you have restricted that area also. Open space, you have 32% already, okay, which is restricted. Now, that all comes up to 116%. That doesn't include the wetlands. It does not include vernal pools or even some of the lakes. So, what I'm getting at is, I don't think it's a real sort of brain strain to say that this is an unrestrained exercise of power. Now, an unrestrained exercise of power is the dictionary definition of tyranny. Now, make no mistake about it, I believe that the DEP has become a tyrannical branch of our government. And unfortunately, I think that the council has also. I think that is a terrible way in the United States of America, all right, to establish the goals that you are after. And especially because you have not tried to go to the public and put some confidence in the public to do something. And what I'm going to refer to is the laws put out by New Hampshire, which the council knows about, all right? So, which was brought up at the very beginning when all of this started. I'm sorry that you didn't look into that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Christine Hepburn, obviously. I'm a resident of Madison. I also own farmland in Western Warren County. So I love the Highlands. I'm here tonight because I was born a worrier, and of course I'm worried about our water supply in New Jersey. as you are, I know. I said that last time I was here. I have been supporting with donations the Highlands Coalition. In a sense, they are my professional worriers, and I do count on them and other groups to worry about the water supply. People in New Jersey have been worried about the sensitive Highlands region and the protection of our water for decades, including people in government. And finally, when there was obviously serious threats to our water supplies, we did get the Highlands Act, and you and your and the staff have been working very, very hard for years, and I really appreciate that. I think the RMP is coming along, and I just wanted to say that I am distressed when I read in the paper that there were 10 amendments the paper describes as aimed at strengthening the regulations to protect natural resources, and that they were voted favorably on by the three of the council members and not by the others. So tonight I just wanted to urge you to take this opportunity given to us by the Highlands Act to actually act to protect the long-term benefits of people as a whole. This is always a hard thing to do. There's lots of vested interests, but I think obviously a change is required, and it's difficult. I urge you to take on that difficult task, push forward, and strengthen the RMP even further than it is already. When 10, 20, 30, 40 environmental groups, both large and small, say there's a concern that something needs to be fixed in the plan in order to ensure a large and healthy water supply, I would urge the council to do that. I personally, well, I'll write my concerns, but one thing that I did want to note is that with the single lot, you know, single home exemptions, there will be some plenty of building going on in the preservation and planning areas. I think it's 21,000 homes. So one concern, of course, is the standards in place to prevent natural resource damage from that building. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Dave Pringle.
David Pringle, I'm the campaign director for the New Jersey Environmental Federation. We have 70,000 members throughout the state, an additional 100 member groups, the vast majority of which consume Highlands drinking water, and even more, the vast majority of which benefit from the economy that Highlands water provides, as well as a recreational value, enjoy the Highlands from Boy Scouts and Cub Scouts, etc. Also live in Cranford, New Jersey, and my family is a customer of Elizabethtown Water and the Bridgetown Raritan River water supply, and thus a consumer of Highlands water. Over the last 10 years, trihalomethanes in our water because of development in the Highlands have been increasing. So when my wife was pregnant, she had increased chances of birth defects and miscarriages because of overdevelopment in the Highlands. Fortunately, that didn't happen, but it has happened in the state, as proven by Centers for Disease Control studies. The Highlands Act is supposed to protect the Highlands' natural resources, especially its drinking water, which is the source for more than half of the state's drinking water. This isn't only a mandate in the Act itself, but it's an environmental, economic, and moral imperative. In this regard, the Council has failed to do the due diligence as charged by the Act. I'm not going to get into all the details. We'll be providing written comments, and I want to respect everybody's time. Most of the points, our biggest concerns, have already been raised tonight through the testimony of Jeff Tittle, Ross Kushner, and Julia Summers, and we wholeheartedly support their testimony. I do want to just emphasize a couple points substantively, and given the political theater that this is all about, I want to make a comment around that as well. The draft final regional master plan, whatever its official name is these days, fails to provide adequate protections for the Highlands. We are already months, if not years, behind schedule in getting this done. We're minimally months away from adoption. You'll probably make one of the arguments we can't make major changes because that's going to delay things further. You can't afford not to, and you can't afford not to provide adequate protections in the meantime by ensuring no adverse impacts to the authorities already invested in you, as well as urging the governor to provide you additional authority through the executive order. You already have a letter to that effect from over 50 groups The Highlands is so important that groups that aren't active to work in the Highlands, Clean Ocean Action, Pinelands Preservation Alliance, Great Egg Harbor Watershed Association, Stony Brook Millstone Watershed Association, even a tiny little group in the southernmost part of New Jersey, Piles Grove, Concerned Citizens of Piles Grove, understand how important, I think understands better than the council's action to date, how important this is, and we urge you to revisit the issues that were referenced before, the 10 amendments, as well as other testimony in these comments. The three substantive points I wanted to highlight are there is no strategic decision-making in this plan. How much water is to be used within the Highlands versus reserved to promote growth, redevelopment in the rest of the state that relies on Highlands water? Even within the Highlands, how much of the water is going to go to that North Haldon school who had to shut down their drinking water fountains because of too high levels of pollutants directly related to overdevelopment in the Highlands versus going to that golf course in Jefferson Township? Your own science dictates that you are already in severe water deficit in too much of the Highlands, yet your own plan suggests that we can continue business as usual with some promises that they're going to somehow make it a little less bad in the future. Common sense dictates that that doesn't make sense. Folks talk about there isn't going to be any more building in the Highlands. Baloney. Read the ad. Your own sciences, or not your own science, your own studies have suggested that there's over 20,000 single unit exemptions in the ad. That's plenty of building. The Pinnacle development in Bergen County, over 280 units, is currently exempted from the ad. There's going to be, if your council didn't permit any more permitting wherever you, any more development where you had control, there would still be thousands upon thousands of units developed where we already don't, with you have no control over, even with the strictest plan, yet we already don't have enough water. You need to do more. We hear about taking landowners' rights away. All that development is going to occur. It's illegal, and you will be compensated if land is taken. But you don't have an inherent right to do whatever you want with your land. You don't have the right to flood my property. You don't have the right to pollute my drinking water. There's many factors that need to be balanced here. You all know that. And if the folks that spent all their time complaining that you're taking their rights away when you're not, because it was actually the legislature that passed this act, would actually get their legislators to stop cutting open space taxes of the Morris and Sussex County freeholders have recently done, and start demanding that their representatives in Trenton, the state legislators from the 23rd through 26th legislative districts, started funding open space, we wouldn't be here today. We talked about you're not listening to the public, or the public doesn't have a process. This has to be at least the 20th hearing in the last 5 years, not in counting any of the many council meetings that you have been through. And I honestly pity you, because you hear this more than anybody, because you attend more of these meetings than anyone. So thank you for the time that you're putting into this. But let's make the time worth it. Let's fix this plan so it does the job that is your legal mandate. Thank you.
Thank you. David Arthur?
Good evening. My name is Dave Arthur. I'm a resident of Madison, a lifetime resident of New Jersey. And in trying to read the act, my eyes glazed over and I got a headache. And I'm not a good one for going through volumes of information. I have to say what I've experienced here today has been very educational for me. Water issues are something Madison's been dealing with for quite some time. We've worked very hard to ensure conscientious development, respecting the rights of others, and it doesn't always work out, and it's a give and take. And I have to say that a lot of the information that I've gotten today from most of the speakers that have been very good is helping me to realize something, and I hope it helps you to realize something, that there are a number of inconsistencies. I think that's a strong
call to action to shore those up and make sure that there aren't a lot of loopholes and wiggle room where there are differences between state and your act as regards to measurement tools to measure things. The inconsistencies and unanswered questions need to be addressed, and I urge the council to get it right the first time, because you're not going to have a chance to go back to it. You've got to do those things now that make sense. It's really incredulous for me to listen to somebody say that in an area that we don't have enough water, it's been classified as a major development area. I mean, that just doesn't make any sense. And that's the kind of inconsistency I'm talking about. And I'm hoping you'll take care of that. You've got to close those loopholes. Your ability to measure. It was okay years ago when nobody knew what we were doing to our oceans, overfishing, et cetera, et cetera. We've got a problem, and I'm hoping that you people will take action to do it sooner than later. It seems there's been a pattern, not just with what's going on here in the state, but as a country, where we don't wake up and face the realities, whether it's oil dependence, alternative fuels, or our water. You've got to do it, and you've got to do it now. Part of the problem is that you're working within an area that a lot of people don't have a great deal of trust in. And I'm reminded of Ronald Reagan's words to the effect that the scariest thing you can hear is, "I'm from the government and I'm here to help you." You've got to take charge of this. I urge you to simplify it and not complicate it anymore. Where you've got those inconsistencies, bring them together, close the loopholes, and it's a delicate balancing act. You know, I've done limited volunteer work, so first thing I should have done was thank you for your time. While there's a lot of people with a lot of things that know what you should do, you're the people sitting there, and I appreciate it. I applaud your efforts. I hope you continue to work hard. Don't get the headache and the glassy eyes. Continue to push forward. Do what's right. You know, there are few precious things, and the water and our farmlands, and you know, that quite frankly supersedes just about everything. Thank you.
Michael Vitale to be followed by Bill Wolf, Wilma Fry, Mary Harris, and Alan McCarty.
Good evening to everybody, and thank you for the Highlands Council as well as everyone else who attended today. Quickly about the RMP, as well as the legislators who enacted this law, still have not addressed the matters of builders like myself. I am Michael Natale, a custom home builder. Here we are going on to 4 years after this law was temporarily put into effect as of March of 2004. Where are we now? The landowners, farmers, and builders are still getting burned with the financial burden of owning the land and still paying taxes on something that's virtually become weak in value and useless until matters can be resolved. The environmentalists, lawmakers, along with people who support this law, keep picking on the overdevelopment within the Highlands Territory, all without bringing financial relief to those in distress. However, I can see positive and negative points on both sides of the fence. I can appreciate the beauty behind the Highlands because I'm certainly not an anti-environmentalist and not a greedy developer as well. I do believe in a form of balance between preservation and development. If preserving the land for better future water quality is the main point, then the fund should have been set aside and created prior to the passing of this law and not afterwards. We all know that the state is going bankrupt, and now at this time the governor is having difficulty trying to raise tolls on the highway. How does he plan on resolving this nightmare? Just close his eyes and walk away? On a positive note, some people talk about a proposed water usage tax. That idea should have been set up and used years ago prior to the passing of this law, so the funds would have already been in place, ready to go for the purchase of land for preservation. Unfortunately, no one in Trenton did their homework properly. Instead, they went out shopping for property without having a method of paying for it first. In other words, the cart was put in front of the horse. Also, these politicians preach this law, then they should practice it by automatically including all of their properties within the preservation zones, no matter where it's located. Our family purchased 112 acres of land 4.5 years ago. Unfortunately, my father, who is the owner of our company, passed away 1 week later after the land purchase, and then our land was affected by the Highlands Act by the following winter, for which we had absolutely no clue what was coming down the pike. Would anyone in this room purchase 112 acres of land knowing that it would become weak in value and useless for working purposes? I don't think so. If the law originally proposed to reimburse the landowners, then what has taken so long? All I asked was to be repaid for what was invested financially, and I would move on. Since this bill went into effect, my family's hard work over the past 40 years has suddenly been arrested and made extremely difficult for us to make progress forward. No one from the state has come forward to offer us a full reimbursement of our financial losses over the land purchase, utilities, engineers, property taxes, and property maintenance. That puts us into a financial black hole of over $3 million. Since then, we've been working with loans from the banks to sustain the ownership of the property, taxes, and maintenance with no income in return. Naturally, the loans with interest are another penalty for owning the property. Must we go bankrupt to help support someone else's inconsiderate decisions? How many more hardships must we endure to run a legitimate business? It's bad enough that my mother became a widow. The economy went sour, and our life savings is getting confiscated. This law has been pushing us to become victimized for trying to stimulate the economy, and now there's no relief in sight. The state is no longer affordable to do business with. Again, where is the fairness? I call this act good for the environment on one hand and legalized robbery on the other hand. Thank you.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the council. Thanks for the opportunity. I'm a resident of West Amwell. We're in the Sourlands, not in the Highlands. But I'm here to just touch upon probably first inning questions where I think you've gone off the rails a little bit and perhaps either didn't use the powers appropriately that were delegated to you in the Highlands Act or misinterpreted them in some fashion. And I think there's a systematic bias, unfortunately, which contradicts the fundamental premise and direction of the Act, I believe. First of all, let me compliment the plan itself. It's a beautiful document. I'm starting to dabble in landscape photography myself, and I think you've got some wonderful photographs in there. So I compliment your photography and graphics people. They did a great job. With that said, I'd like to take the approach that Ross Kushner took, which was interrogate the map at a level of detail and scrutiny where the reality of the on-the-ground reality is directly connected to the policies and plans and programs and implementation. The rhetoric of the plan meets the physical reality of the landscape. And I think he showed you very graphically what your policies and standards or lack thereof mean. I want to talk more broadly and look at more of the more conceptual statutory interpretations and policies that I see as being flawed, which will manifest themselves on the landscape. First of all, I want to address this issue of balance, because I think it's a legal term, and I think you badly misconstrued the word balance. First of all, everybody here talks about balance. The word balance is used in the Act exactly once, and it's with respect to a balanced transportation system, which was going to bias the transportations away from roads into more progressive and modern transportation policies. However, the word balance is used in the State Planning Act, and clearly that act sets forth a balance of economic development and environmental preservation. There's no dispute over that. But the Highlands Act clearly did not embrace balance. It explicitly rejected balance in the legislative findings, where it said the current, I think somebody already quoted it, the current regulatory and statutory framework will not protect the existing land use and environmental regulatory system cannot protect the water and natural resources of the New Jersey Highlands against the environmental impacts of sprawl development. That's a finger in the eye. That's a
the status quo is inadequate. It's not just home rule and municipal zoning. It's what the DEP does in their regulations. It's what the State Planning Commission did under the state plan. So you were supposed to take that charge from the legislature and acknowledge what was wrong with the current framework and change it in a way that protected the water resources of the region. I don't think you did that. The second question I'd like to touch on is the notion of, if you look at Section 10A and 10B for the objectives of both the preservation area planning effort and the planning area planning objective with respect to water resources, it's an identical legislative standard. That means where the line between the preservation area boundary, which was drawn in Trenton for political reasons, where that line meets has no bearing on the physical scientific nature of the water resource. And you were directed by the Act to quote, protect, restore, and enhance the quality and quantity of the surface and groundwater equally in both planning area and preservation area. I cannot understand how you could have the DEP have standards to protect groundwater and nitrate target levels and all forms of restriction on infrastructure. And I'm hearing testimony that says the plan would allow extension of sewer lines in the preservation area, cluster development in the preservation area, different nitrate standards in the preservation area versus the planning area. I don't see how you could possibly do that. I think you've completely misconstrued the Act there. The third point, the Act very clearly mandates, it doesn't give you discretion, it mandates that you map preservation zones, plural, preservation zones, more than one. Again, words mean things, they have legal meaning, and I don't see the word preservation zone in that map or in the plan at all. You didn't fulfill a statutory mandate. I don't understand how you could try to even get away with that. The word cumulative impact is used in the statute a number of times, I believe 24 times, with respect to virtually every resource. That is the tool given by the legislature to the council to plug loopholes in all the concessions that went into where the boundary lines were drawn in the preservation area versus planning area and all the 17 exemptions that are in the Act. You were supposed to then use the tools you were given to mediate and fix the damage the legislature did for political reasons and use good science and do that. And you haven't stepped up to the plate and done that. With the same thing, with the exemptions, there's a provision in the Act that says exempt projects specifically should be prioritized for acquisition. That's there for a reason. That's there for people like me said, wait a minute, if very bad projects have been permitted historically and they're going to go forward, like the Eagle Ridge project, a perfect example. If there's a bad project that's been permitted and there's not enough water, but the legislature has given that project an exemption, then you guys should put it on the list for acquisition such that that development does not go forward. I don't see that in there either. So all the opt-in provision, Section 15 talks about the opt-in, and it talks about a framework, and the framework is the regional management plan. Presumptively, the regional management plan has uniform standards to protect water, so towns should be opting into the same densities to protect water in the planning area and the preservation area. And if you read the Act closely, like I have, and I participated in the drafting of it, the framework in which you're opting into in Section 15 is explicitly linked to Section 14A. Section 14A talks about the preservation area. So I understand. I want to educate the council because, frankly, I was involved in the early phases of both the governor's task force in staffing that thing on behalf of the department. I represented the commissioner of the Department of Environmental Protection in that process. I was involved with Senator Smith and the Office of Legislative Services in drafting the Act. So I think I bring an informed perspective here that I think the council might want to listen to and the record may want to reflect. The other point is the word voluntary. That notion, voluntary and mandatory, does not mean strong and weak. I think that you've misconstrued the voluntary nature of the planning area protections and perceived them and structured them in a way that they're weaker than the preservation area, which I think is just wrong. I think you need to break out the difference between water protections, environmental protections like habitat and forest, and growth management. I don't think you've conceptually done that because there are different standards for each tool. Growth management, yes, in fact, you should be doing more growth promotion in the planning area, yes. But that doesn't mean you're doing less environmental protection there. And these things are clashing in this plan. The conformance model. The Act was structured in a way such that the if you read the legislative findings, the deficiency in home rule, independent property owners cumulatively creating problems, municipal governments not coordinating, you having regional planning powers, all that says is the council is going to set up a template that the town, you make it as easy as possible, you put all the details in, you give them all notice and what they're opting into. Right now, you've created such ambiguity that any town's going to be reluctant to opt in. If you made it clear up front, they'd be willing to opt in, particularly if their residents knew what the benefits were. The last thing is the deficits. I think people have talked about that in detail. But the point is, we're on the horizon now of the data set you've used to derive all your stream flow statistics and et cetera. That is all, given the global warming science we now know, the precipitation patterns and stream and river flow patterns of the past will not be the going forward pattern. This is a plan. It's supposed to anticipate change, that particularly change you don't have any control over. So you need an error. You need another degree of conservancy in your methodology with respect to whether the data set you've relied upon is valid. And lastly, the Act reserves the final say in the governor's hands, and he did that for a reason. Because if the council was a renegade council and violated the premises of the Act, then the governor could veto the minutes and to protect state interests. Now, there's a strong state interest in the water in the Highlands. And if the people that live there don't want to protect that resource for the people that live there and the people in the rest of the state, then the governor needs to step up and veto the plan and set direction. Thank you.
Thank you. Will McBride?
Hello, good evening. My name is Wilma Fry, F-R-E-Y, and I'm here on behalf of New Jersey Conservation Foundation, which is a statewide, member-supported, nonprofit land trust and conservation organization whose mission is to preserve New Jersey's land and natural resources for the benefit of all. We appreciate the opportunity to comment, and thank you for holding these public hearings. NJCF has been working on protection of the Highlands region for well over 20 years and was both the founder of the New Jersey Highlands Coalition and its leader for many years. Highlands protection, however, was first officially recognized as essential to preserve New Jersey's primary source of water supply over 100 years ago. As you know, in 1907, the Potable Water Commission stated that the Highlands watersheds are the best in the state and should be preserved at all hazards. There has been too much laxness in the past regarding this important matter, they said in 1907. Well, the laxness has improved little for the past 100 years. However, we do now have the opportunity with this Highlands Regional Master Plan to set things on the right course. The Highlands Act of 2004 recognized the irreplaceable values of the Highlands region, its water, and also its forests, its farmland, and wildlife habitat, including habitat for many threatened endangered species, its recreational, historic, cultural, archaeologic, and scenic resources, altogether its, quote, essential character. The Act was passed and enacted in order to protect these critical resources. The Act was not passed to endorse business as usual, which, when the Act was passed, and still does, consist of the uncoordinated land use decisions of 88 municipalities, 7 counties, and a myriad of private landowners making decisions based on their own interests alone. The Highlands Act called for regional planning, which is one of the few tools we know of that actually can protect water and other resources like stream corridors, forests, mountain ridgelines, wildlife, and scenery that do not recognize local political boundaries and cannot be protected on a purely local basis. We have before us now the draft of a regional plan. It is based on the most up-to-date information. It is the product of the dedicated effort of a hardworking staff and consultants. It is a product of much agony among council members. Many people have spent innumerable hours focused on it.
Nevertheless, the RMP does not yet provide adequate protection for the water and other critical Highlands resources. I offer four examples. Although the Council's own scientific analysis shows that over 60% of Highlands subwatersheds are already in deficit, the plan would nevertheless allow development to continue in these areas, making an already existing problem worse. Prior mitigation of anticipated impacts is not currently required by the plan. This perpetuates a myth of unlimited water supply. The plan needs to acknowledge and enforce the real need to limit growth in these deficit areas. We have an impending water crisis in the making here, which must be firmly addressed and decisively addressed. This plan, unfortunately, cannot support business as usual, or it will not have done its job. My second point is that the plan leaves too much uncertain, as it lacks clear protective standards to implement its goals and objectives. These standards must be developed immediately and adopted along with the plan, so it is clear that they are a part of the plan. The third point is that the plan would allow local officials to negotiate land use boundaries and potentially add more unwise growth. Fourth, the Act was passed in large measure to halt suburban sprawl that was and still is destroying Highlands forests and farmlands. But the plan would still allow non-farm residential development in agricultural areas. Non-farm development, even if it's clustered, does not preserve farming, farmland, or agriculture. To sum up, the Highlands Council was established to oversee the protection of a region and its critical resources for the benefit of not only its residents, but importantly, the entire state. We urge you, the Council, to ensure that this plan is based on perspectives that are both broad and long-term, and that you do your job of protecting the Highlands resources and its critical resources. NJCF will be providing extensive, detailed written comments on various aspects of the master plan. Thank you very much.
Marion Harris.
I'm the chairman of the Morris County Trust for Historic Preservation, doing my chore again of making sure that the phrase cultural resources is mentioned at least once at every hearing, and I'm going to get it in more than once this time. We want very much to be able to support this plan, and we believe that it will be strengthened to the point where we can support it. We think that the Highlands Act offers one of the best possibilities currently available for the protection of cultural resources as well as natural resources. Over the past year, we've made a number of spoken and written comments concerning the details of the proposed processes for cultural resource protection in the RMP. And I can summarize those comments very briefly by saying that we see the present language as providing more potential than actual protection. It would be encouraging to see more of those comments incorporated into the plan. Now, there's a different and very important point that we think needs to be made clear to the public, and we think that for your sake, it needs to be said here as often as possible. This plan is not a land grab. It does not prevent a farmer from continuing to farm or from building a new house for his farm family. It doesn't prevent a homeowner from building an addition. What it does try to prevent is the kind of development which is destroying the livable character of the state on all sides. Development of that kind and on that scale benefits no one but the speculative developers. It does not lower people's taxes. It does not solve the affordable housing crisis, and it does not improve the quality of life. I don't really like living in a world where this has to be pointed out to people, but I think it does have to be. Land and natural resources and cultural resources are community assets, not private investments. Private owners have no guarantee of their value. When you buy stocks or a house or some land, you know that the value may go up or down, and the risk is yours. The Highlands Plan offers unprecedented protection from such losses. We believe that when citizens become more aware of these unusual protections, they may well consider them grounds for legal action.
Colin McCarty, and I'll read the names of the next speakers after. McCarty is Barbara Sacco, David Piper, Cindy Ehrenclough, David Epstein, Emil DeVito, Deborah Post, Mark Zakatansky, Lynn Siebert, and Victor Lago-Marcino. And that's all the people signed to speak. If you're not one of those people and you would like to speak, go to the back table and fill out a card.
Good evening. Ladies and gentlemen, unfortunately this is only the second meeting I ever attended, and the only information I've gotten over the past years has been through the newspaper and Hunter and Democrat and whatever. I'm going to speak to you about three things. One is, as a father, the second thing I'm going to talk to you about is I'm a master plumber in this state for 30 years, and the other item being a part-time farmer for 30 years also. One, the first point I want to make is I live in Washington Township. I have 40 acres. I bought a farm 30 years ago. It was in disrepair. I improved the land, improved the farmhouse. I have three daughters with the intention of someday possibly giving them a lot to build a house on. Of course, Washington Township went from 2 to 3 to 5 acres. I said, no sweat, I have 40. Well, now this is a dead issue that my children can no longer live on my land, or I can, you know, willing a piece of property, plus my value of my land has dropped to nil. From what I understand is there's no real set policy, or there's no monies that are being available to people that are losing their property value. Enough being said about that. The second part is I'm going to retire soon. I just bought a new piece of farm equipment. I have 15 or 20, about 18 tillable acres. I want to increase that probably to 30. I want to take hedgerows out. I have a pond on my property. I want to irrigate if I have to. So I cannot be, I'm not going to invest in a new tractor, which is on order, and not be able to do the things I want to do. It might be a little bit on the arrogant side, but I mean, I have waited 31 years to retire, to be from a part-time farmer to my retirement days. I'm 61 next month, so that's enough said to that. The third thing is, I am a licensed plumber. I don't do residential work. I worked on big union jobs. I put water mains in this town. I worked in sewer treatment plants. I've worked up at the Hop and the Roach, and I've seen bad water be turned to good water. I've worked in car washes. I've seen gray water be turned to good water. Now, I hear people here about conserving water and all that stuff, but if you ask people to put their hands up right now and ask them how many are reclaiming the gray water from their dishwashers and washing machines and possibly using for non-potable uses in their toilets, you'd have a very small hands come up. And again, because I live up on Schooley's Mountain, I've watched the rivers every year overflow to extremes, the Muskanek and the South Branch. If you're going to conserve water, get into these rivers, repair the dam in Hackettstown, put some retaining ponds in or whatever, and look at it. And I'll go one further. My father-in-law was a well driller for 30 years. I worked with him summers when I was in high school. I understand that he worked in the hardest area up in the Kenelon area there, where it's trap rock. Wells are 300 or 400 feet deep. I helped him drill many wells. Some of them went dry as the years went on. But the plumbing industry, the towns have to look at the the requirements for deeper wells and maybe up them up a little bit. And also, I don't, you know, the National Plumbing Code, all the new toilets that are coming out are low flush toilets. And again, if you have to put a raise in any house that was built 10, 15 years ago, didn't have it. You know, these people got to start upgrading their plumbing fixtures, look at saving water, and I think they would best leave us alone. Thank you.
Thank you.
I oppose the profit-making actions advocated by developers and agribusiness designed to harm and hurt the clean water sources necessary for 15 million New Jersey residents. Any sound government must take prudent action to make sure ample water is available for its entire population. Some sections in this area are already water deficient. We cannot have development if there is no water. I do not want water standards downgraded to suit municipal, county, or state officials, developers, land speculators, and others who think only of private benefit. I support putting this plan into effect and taking further steps to protect the people and their water needs. Overdevelopment has been rampant in New Jersey. We need to stop and evaluate and protect. I have heard much whining by developers and agribusiness about not being able to make a financial killing on their property. The fact is, profits from a protected home business location will in fact present stable, attractive living for ourselves, our children, and our grandchildren. We need to protect the Highlands from profiteers. I agree with promoting the general welfare for all. We must have water for all. Thank you.
David Michael.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Very glad to be here once again to talk to you about the RMP. I'm the Highlands Project Director for the Association of New Jersey Environmental Commissions, and our comments tonight will be supplemented by extensive written comments before the close of the comment period. I wanted to touch on a couple of issues that are very interesting to us at ANJEC. ANJEC works closely with municipalities to try to improve the protection of natural resources. And in looking at the RMP, we look at it through those eyes. If I was a local environmental commissioner, what would I see if I looked at this plan? Most of our environmental commissioners in the state are pretty plugged in to what's going on in the universe. The first thing they would see was there was no section on energy in the plan, and there was no section dealing with the potential impacts or responses to climate change in the Highlands. Those impacts were going to be very different, we believe, than the impacts on the coast, but they will still be important to keep in mind, particularly as you're doing monitoring of your plan's progress over time. The next thing that we could observe was that there's a real tough problem in trying to keep your mind logically flowing as you read through this plan. There's just a very difficult and sort of jerky progression through the plan that makes it very hard to say, well, there's the beginning, there's the middle, there's the end, and now I know what I must do. Very tough to see. When we look at the programs that are offered, many of them are what we might call partially developed, and that's sort of understandable given the time pressure that you're under. But I think you could do considerably better in making those programs a little more specific so that, for example, a municipality that was considering opting in would really know what was going to be expected of it during that process. And to assist that, the development of more bright line standards. We have a lovely scientific process that was used here. A really nice scientific process. And one of the values of science is it can give you things like numbers. It can give you standards. So working on the subject of standards is really something to think about. And then finally, when we get to conformance, both municipalities and the council should have access to something that defines what their responsibilities are before, during, and after conformance. The council's responsibilities also very important for the council and future councils to remember. We're going to be looking at an extended process here. I've prepared written comments on a number of specific sections of the plan. I'll not go through them in detail. I'll just give you the written comment. But I did want to touch on the importance of adding a section, perhaps in subpart B, about trust resources and the public trust doctrine. What we're dealing with here through the Act is an exercise in protecting the public trust. And what we've heard repeatedly at council meetings and other hearings have been a collection of private interests looking at the plan. It's important that not only the council but the reader understand why public trust doctrine, particularly as regards to water, differs in New Jersey than it does in most of the United States, particularly west of the Mississippi. There are important differences that need explanation to the public. Another concept that you use often is the use of HUC 14 units as planning areas or as focuses for analysis. Nobody out on the street knows what a HUC 14 is. They think it's probably something written by Mark Twain, and he's 14 years old. So get a lay explanation of HUC 14 in there, and then explain to municipalities that they probably won't control any single HUC 14 exclusively when they're doing their planning. And when you get to classifying your watersheds and your riparian areas as to value, try to make some put back into that equation for cultural resources. Right now, we're evaluating our watersheds and our riparian areas as if people could do no right to those watersheds or those riparian areas. And we have an awful lot of cultural resource material right in the riparian zones. Many of those things are very valuable scenically, ecologically, and historically. So think about some give back. Why should a riparian zone be downgraded because it has a historic bridge crossing it? So, or three historic bridges crossing it. And the more historic bridges it has, the lower its ranking would be. So think about those kinds of interactions in the plan. I'm not going to take any more of your time, and I will leave you copies of my written comments.
Thank you
very much.
Cindy Erickson.
Thank you for the opportunity to comment. I'm Cindy Erincloo, Executive Director of the Upper Raritan Watershed Association. The association is looking forward to supporting the regional master plan with changes that will be articulated in written comments to follow. Today we want to address several of our chief concerns regarding deficiencies in the area of water supply. We mean for our points to be constructive because our water supplies are in trouble and our watershed region needs the protections promised in the plan. First, IRWA's concerned that assigning conditional water availability to deficit HUC 14s, sub-watersheds, before comprehensive mitigation programs are implemented is inconsistent with the Act. We encourage the Council to ensure that mitigation plans and implementation occur before additional consumptive depletive uses are allowed in water deficit areas. Further supporting the suggestion is the fact that there are numerous assumptions inherent in the mitigation techniques cited in the RMP. We will not know just how effective they are at reducing deficits until we're able to evaluate the impacts of mitigation on water availability. To further reduce deficits in water use in constrained areas, we will ask the Council to develop Highlands-specific criteria that would warrant the designation of water supply critical areas, since New Jersey DEP water allocations cannot legally be reduced without declaring the source a water supply critical area. Reduced allocation permits will provide incentives for increasing conservation and efficiency. Considering water utilities, IRWA also believes that improvements to a firm's capacity should be addressed in the RMP because improvements in infrastructure efficiency could ultimately augment the water available and reduce deficits. While many utilities serve non-Highlands users, it's unclear how big of an impact non-Highlands water users are having on the region. The map on page 5 of the RMP could be updated to clarify which users are currently supplied for constrained or deficit HUC 14s. Finally, IRWA suggests that no net change to reservoir safe yields be allowed. We'd like the Council to better define the meaning of no significant safe yield reduction cited in objectives referencing water allocation permits and ensure that does not have a negative impact during times of drought. Since groundwater capacity includes a calculation to represent safe yields for reservoirs, ecological integrity will suffer when the original safe yield volume is employed. Again, we will expand on these points and others in written comments, and I thank you for your thoughtful attention today.
Thank you very much. David Epstein.
Good evening. My name is David Epstein. I'm with Morris Land Conservancy. I want to thank you for your work here in going through this process, and I also want to salute your stamina through these many years of many, many hearings. A lot of what the points that we want to make have been said, so I'll be very brief in saying that Morris Land Conservancy supports not only the Act, but asks you to keep your focus, as the Act did, on protecting drinking water. It's clearly the most important element here. And we request a few changes in the Act, specifically, obviously we're going to have more comments later, but we ask that you prohibit development in the sub-watersheds where the water supply is already being outstripped by water demand. We ask that you do not allow any sewer lines or package treatment plants to be constructed in the preservation area, except those under the very limited circumstances allowed by the Highlands Act. We ask you to keep the exemptions from the 300-foot buffer requirements around important waters, and we ask that you, in the regional master plan, protect and enhance forest resources by requiring forest stewardship plans and by state-certified foresters and not the weaker forest management plans. We ask in the regional master plan that you establish clear protective standards for map adjustments to ensure these can be evaluated based upon their impact upon natural resources. And finally, we ask that you clearly designate no development zones. Didn't see that in the regional master plan at this point. They should be, as the Highlands Act required them and asked that they be. Again, we ask you to keep your focus on protecting the drinking water, and thank you again for the time that you're putting into this.
Thank you. Emil DeVito.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Emil DeVito. I'm an ecologist with New Jersey Conservation Foundation. Other staff members of the foundation have already spoken about our mission and our history regarding the Highlands, so I just want to briefly touch on a few points where we would, regarding some of the natural resource issues in the plan, where we would like to see some very specific strengthening of the draft master plan. First, there's a great deal of language regarding mitigation when an applicant is going to proceed with some sort of development, and recognizing that there may be some loss of natural resource value associated with that and how to mitigate those impacts. It needs to be clearly stated that there needs to be an alternatives analysis and a method for first avoiding those impacts and second minimizing those impacts, and only apply mitigation as a last resort. the history of mitigation in New Jersey is ripe with examples of applicants thinking that because they have a good mitigation plan somewhere else, that they should be able to get to do what they want on the parcel that's been proposed for development. And the quality of the mitigation plan should have nothing to do with whether or not somebody gets their permit. That should only be taken up after someone qualifies for a permit, and then all mitigation plans should be high quality. So it shouldn't be that someone should shop a good mitigation plan in order to get a permit to do something. The standard for mitigation, once it's decided that someone deserves to receive a development permit, should be one of no net loss. And those should be a no net loss of the quantity of habitat in terms of acreage, the quality of the habitat, for example, whether or not the core forest is being lost, the most highly prized resource. Rare habitat types such as scrub shrub wetlands or scrub shrub habitats, early successional habitats that are particularly important sometimes for endangered species, or critical threatened endangered species habitats such as winter hibernacula for timber rattlesnakes or some other rare species. So there need to be a variety of parameters in terms of no net loss. And then it's very important that the mitigation plans be based on existing demonstrated science, not some armchair biological folly which is often presented by consultants. Perfect example of that happened in the last year or so down in the Pinelands, where endangered species habitat was sacrificed knowingly in order to clean up a purported water quality problem. And the mitigation plan proposed, a multi-million dollar mitigation plan and long-term habitat study was proposed. 100 threatened snakes were relocated to a different place nearby. And within a year and a half of this relocation, the first thing that happened was a massive flood which flooded the holding pens of the 100 snakes that were relocated. Then after the flood was abated, a number of hawks came and just sat on top of the pens and started eating all the snakes. And then this year, the pens burned down in the Stafford wildfire. So, this multi-million dollar proposal, supposedly state-of-the-art study, which couldn't go wrong, and we were going to find out, you know, how wonderfully these snakes would do upon relocation, is going to be a miserable failure because it was all pie in the sky, unproven armchair biology. And so you can't have mitigation projects being proposed which utilize unproven concepts. And that's standard fare. And so this no net loss, trading habitat for some pie in the sky manipulation, is not something they should be depending upon in your final standards and practices that eventually get developed for the draft plan, for the final regional master plan. There's a great deal of discussion about forest stewardship and the protection of existing forest resources, and not enough discussion about deer overabundance and invasive species. Deer overabundance, and through no fault of many landowners or many land managers, deer overabundance is destroying the reproductive and regenerative capacity of the forests. And as a result, as some previous speakers mentioned, what we need are forest stewardship plans. The highest standard for forest plans are forest stewardship plans. Those are the kind that you have to have if you get money from the federal government through the USDA, Department of Agriculture, or the Department of Interior for, you know, sponsoring forest, various types of forest activities. And when you get federal money, you have to have a forest stewardship plan which takes into account things like regeneration and endangered species and all sorts of ecological successional concepts. Currently, for 40 years or so, the state's been relying on woodland management plans that are certified by the DEP, and that's what are presented to tax assessors so that people can get property tax abatement. And those woodland management plans lack standards that take into account these issues. And for the most part, those woodland management plans are failing miserably. I can take you to dozens and dozens and dozens of private properties that have been under woodland management plans for decades, and the forests are falling apart, losing species, and losing natural resource value because those woodland management plans don't meet these more modern federal standards for forest stewardship plans. Sure. Finally, if public money is spent to purchase forest protection easements under some sort of forest protection program, forest preservation easement program, we would hope that that would not be run by the Department of the State Department of Agriculture. The State Department of Agriculture has no ability to monitor conservation easements, especially forest easements, and so that program should be run by the Green Acres Program, and no one should be able to get public dollars without having a forest stewardship plan instead of a forest management plan or woodland management plan. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Deborah Coast.
My name is Deborah Post, and before I begin, I would like to note the egregious double standard exhibited here today. For 3 years, you have cut off the landowners mid-sentence. We weren't worthy of being heard. But those who agree with you here today have been allowed to drone forever. A well-financed swift-boating campaign was launched by the environmentalist lobby when the latest incarnation of the Highlands Regional Master Plan was introduced. The environmentalist negative public relations blitz has been mighty and well-funded. The dissemination of misinformation about this plan has sought to smear the hapless farmers and landowners who have lost $6 billion of land values, and to tell the public that there are just lots of options for a just compensation. This council knows this is false, yet you are complicit in the enviro lobbyist game and do nothing to set the record straight. Swift voting is the tactic resorted to by those who have nothing honest or constructive to say, those whose desperation leads them to lies, lies, and more lies. Lies in support of this master plan that fails in every way to meet the mandates of the Highlands Act. Summers, O'Hearn, Kushner, and other salaried staffers of rich environmental organizations write that the Highlands landowners are just whining because they can easily recoup their land value losses through the Transfer of Development Rights Program and easement sales to the state. Where is the Transfer of Development Rights Program that your minions tell the public exists? This council surely knows that a TDR program does not exist because this council has failed to establish a Transfer of Development Rights Program per the directions of the legislature. This council has failed to implement Section 8A of the Highlands Act, as you were charged with doing. Where is the opportunity to sell easements to the state? This council surely knows that the state is broke. The Garden State Preservation Trust is empty, as I am confident that all have noticed. The minuscule millions reauthorized by Question 3 last fall are now to be spent on urban parks, as exhorted by the same paid environmental lobbyists who tell the public that the Highlands farmers can be paid. Their manipulation of the truth is abominable. I own and operate a pick-your-own-apple farm, the first pick-your-own-orchard in this state, and one beloved by a generation of apple pickers. Yet in the newspapers, the paid lobbyists print that I am a greedy speculator and one of those nasty would-be developers. Next fall, I will hang a sign warning little Susie and Joey's mommy and daddy that behind the exhausted smile of the old lady greeting them at the gate is gluttony and avarice. The environmentalist respect for the truth mirrors the respect for the truth of the junk science underlying your plan. This process has been about lies, lies, and more lies. Funded by environmental extremist lobbies and implemented with the finest of corruption that New Jersey can muster. This council argues that the phantom exemptions provide adequate just compensation to landowners. Another fantastic fantasy imagined by those who use smoke and bluster to avoid implementing the mandates in the Highlands Act. Section 6N of the Highlands Act orders this council to identify lands in the preservation area where development shall not occur and to recognize the need for just compensation. For Mr. Borden's edification, the concept of just compensation derives from wording in the Constitution of the United States of America. Federal courts have long held that just compensation means fair market value, full fair market value, not minimal use, not 10% of value, but 100% of the market price realizable in an open and competitive marketplace. Even the courts of the state of New Jersey have embraced just compensation as meaning fair market value. Nowhere in the plan has this council identified the lands due just compensation per Section 6N. You have finessed the most important of your duties. A while back, I called on all those sporting big green circles to share the pain of the Highlands Act by donating their 401ks, IRAs, and pension funds to this cause that they so passionately espouse. Please note that not one has stepped forward. Their environmental convictions are sincere only when it personally costs them not a penny. The environmentalists refer to community assets only when they belong to someone else. It has been 9 3-years since Chairman Weingart bet Senator Smith a cup of coffee that he could shove a master plan down the throats of Highlands landowners without a whimper. I ask the members of this council, with any conscience and intellectual integrity, to ensure that the chairman never gets his cup of coffee and to vote no to this plan until all mandates have been fulfilled and funding is available.
Mark Zakutansky.
Thank you. My name is Mark Zakutansky. I'm a resident of Flanders, New Jersey. Thank you for affording me the opportunity to speak here today. You can lead a horse to the river, but if you have 5.4 million horses and you continue to allow development in water deficit areas, there won't be any water for those horses to drink. At council meetings, I've heard this final draft regional master plan referred to as balanced. In using the term balanced, I wholeheartedly hope this council plans to adequately balance your mandate to protect, restore, and enhance Highlands resources with the 5.4 million people outside of the Highlands region who rely on clean and plentiful Highlands drinking water. Clean Highlands water also serves New Jersey's three largest industries, pharmaceuticals, food processing, and tourism. These are products that we use every day, from Budweiser to Nabisco to Goya Foods, etc. It is critical for the continued solvency and success of our state's economy that much stronger protections are incorporated into the regional master plan before adoption, including preventing increased development in water deficit areas. I urge this council to strengthen the final draft regional master plan before adoption and live up to your legislative mandate to protect, enhance, and restore water quantity and quality and natural resources. To preserve our state's economy and the public health of the 5.4 million residents and the three vital industries and many others that rely on clean and plentiful Highlands drinking water. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Lynn Siebert.
Thank you for letting me speak. My name is Lynn Siebert. I'm wearing a green thing, but I must tell you that I'm president of the Burnham Park Association. It's a neighborhood association of 450 households in the southwestern corner of Morris Township. And I've been president for over 20 years and have never received a penny in salary. And our total budget is maybe $5,000. And I think many of us are extremely dedicated and have no other motivation except to really be concerned with the public interest in the most broad and general sense. I wanted to just mention, I won't recap her points because I am mindful of time, but Jean Rich made a number of points about the preservation of the resources in the Washington Valley and in Jones Woods in Morris Township. I know that those are local areas, but they also have regional implications. They are both mature forested areas with exceptional resource value, wetlands, Category 1 streams, endangered and threatened species, both state and federal level. And I think to decrease any protection for that area is a mistake. I think they deserve the highest level of protection. As far as the regional master plan, I am extremely much in favor of a very, very strong regional planning impetus. I think we've seen time and time again how fragmented and problematic it is when local home rule is operative, because we all know streams and natural resources do not respect the boundaries of townships or municipalities. It was a revelation to me to hear at a recent meeting that the studies that have been done long-term in the Pinelands have shown that the restrictions, the regional planning that has gone into that area, and the restrictions that were, I think, at the time they were first proposed, evinced alarm, and people were concerned that they would lose their land value and that the area would be stifled, that all of those turned out not to really bear fruit. And in fact, the area in the Pinelands had lower taxes and higher property values even after all of this time, and was increasingly so favored. And I think that we can learn a lesson from that as to the value of regional planning. As far as your final stage now of perfecting and trying to put together the last amendations of the regional master plan for the Highlands, I really strongly urge you, on behalf of our association and also on behalf of many, many concerned citizens beyond our immediate boundaries, please strengthen it. Do not allow development in water deficit areas. Do not allow sewer extensions into preservation and forest resource areas. And please do not water down the standards to accommodate political expediency, municipal or county or state officials, developers, and so forth, because I think what we lose in that is we lose the long-term capability to meet basic needs. And the strict standards that you have been working on, there's a lot of very good science in the plan. I urge you to please not allow a scattershot enforcement to take place. I'm concerned that if standards are loosely defined and if you allow for case-by-case decision-making, you're going to set yourselves up as a super board of adjustment. You'll be doomed forever, and you've already paid your price. You'll be doomed forever to be reevaluating each case. And if you don't have very strict, clear, and well-articulated standards, I think you allow yourself to be open to challenges, which again will doom you into that purgatory of countless hearings. Please make sure that they are clearly written. Use this as this opportunity to really get it right. We really are counting on that, and we hope you will do that. Thank you for the time.
Thank you. Victor Michael Garcia.
Hi, I'm Vic Lagomarsino, lifelong resident of New Jersey. If you support the Highlands Bill in any way, you are collaborating in the largest white-collar theft in the state of New Jersey. Only a state with pay-to-play, which is legalized bribery, would have the audacity to steal millions of property value from its landowners. You can environmentally sugarcoat it, but it's still stealing. The council will tell you they don't have the power to tax the water users and allocate that money to the landowners. But have you had that recommendation? Are you pushing for that recommendation? It is the fair thing to do. And why not? Because the water users are mostly in the Democratic areas of the state. while the Republican areas are in the mostly in the preservation area of the state. This is a perfect power play, stifling the Republican voters while growing the Democratic areas. I realize the council is not part of that original master decision. I've gone to meeting after meeting, listening to people complain about sprawl. They cut down the tree across the street and they built a house. Well, you know, they cut down trees to build your house. At least people should realize that. Doesn't matter if you live there for 50 years or 50 days. Yes, you are sprawl. Unless you live in a major city, you are sprawl. Excuse me. Which leads me to the sewer situation in the preservation area. People continue to say, please, no sewers. I truly do not understand why. Sewers remove human waste from a delicate aquifer, treat it with modern system before releasing it back into use. What could be better for the preservation area than to properly treat human waste? Thank you very much.
Terry Baird, and that's the last name I have. So if anyone else who wants to speak, please go to that table.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Terry Baird. I live in Whippany. My family goes back several hundred years in the area. And I live on a small farm. It belonged to my family 150 years ago. And from my standpoint, a farmer is the best steward of the land that we have. Who else would want to ruin the viable resource that they have in order to make a living? I raise meat goats, mostly boars. Bottom of my property is about 150 feet from pond. Yes, it's in a wetland area. We don't have to worry about the goats going into wetland area, though, because they don't want to get their feet wet. However, I don't think they understand the 300 feet. Now, that 300 feet puts them pretty much in my backyard. And I'm not quite sure if Hanover Township would appreciate me fencing in my front yard, although it probably would stop traffic. But, you know, realistically speaking, 300 feet is an extremely huge amount of space. I'm also a teacher. And I'm also heavily involved in the Morris County 4-H program. I deal with youngsters all the time. And I don't see anything educating our young people. I don't see an education factor in the plan. That's our future. If they don't learn from a very young age the importance of what we do and what we don't do, then where's our country going to be? No education factor whatsoever. We're all just supposed to know. I work in Newark. Do you think that the people that I work with in Newark, who live in Newark, understand that their water comes from a beautiful place, the Newark watershed? Do you think that they understand the importance of conserving that very viable resource? It's not in their backyard. It's in somebody else's backyard, our backyard. Everybody who's in the Highlands region, it's in our backyard. We become the stewards for them. I don't think we should have to suffer for that. But I also think that we need to develop some education. Because otherwise, where are we going to go? We're putting a Band-Aid on. So in 20 years, everybody's going to change it. Because they'll, you know, it'll go before the council. They'll fight this, fight that, fight this, fight that. Lawyers will get rich. And still, the children who will be our ones paying our Social Security, God bless me for saying that, they need to know. So please, if it's not in your realm, please pass it on to our beloved governor. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That concludes this hearing. Just to reiterate what I said at the outset, with all the members of the council will receive a written record of what was said here. We encourage you to submit written comments. And we will have two more hearings next Monday and Wednesday. Monday at Passaic County College and Wednesday at Fort East High School. Thank you all for your comments and for participating.